2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great. University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for, the sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
What's up, everybody? Welcome on in. It's Unrivaled. It is 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Fascinating last couple of hours here listening to Hanson Scotty and for them to be able to get Ryan Smith and Dana White on. Amazing stuff. The UFC fight coming to Salt Lake, I don't think you can overstate how big this is in terms of a sport that has always been a secondary or tertiary sport that has become so giant. And to have Ryan Smith go, what can we do to grease the skids so that you can get this the UFC card in here in August? And Ryan Smith did it. I mean, Dana White even mentioned on Hanson Scotty show, hey, we had to figure out just the places that are going to make it easy for us to do business. And the Jazz were a willing partner. So that was amazing. And then in all of that, Ryan Smith, of course, was confronted with the question about the jerseys in a roundabout way by Scotty. And so, listen.
You're missing the best part about the whole day today.
What's the best part about the whole day?
Like, UFC, I don't know. It's not my thing.
Yes, I know.
Purple jerseys, whatever.
No, I know.
But here is the best part about this day. Like, this is the most important day of the year. You don't realize that, do you? This is the longest day of the year.
Oh,
this is the day that we have the most sunshine.
Oh,
it's
boy.
The positive. It's the happy. I'll even talk positive about UFC.
Sweet.
I'll even sit there and I'll have some kind of conversation about how marvelous it is that two people get in a ring and beat the crap out of each other.
Hey,
I love that,
it's
man.
It's gonna happen.
Bring it on. Bring more of it on.
I know that.
And you know what? I think they should fight each other in purple jerseys.
But the positive
thing
is,
that's what I think. Just put them in purple jerseys and just pound the purple out of them.
But today is the longest day of the year. That's your headline?
That's the most important thing.
Good
right
for
there.
You. Scott, I always forget every June 21st that you roll this out on me.
Yes.
Today's the longest day of the year. I'm like, yeah, it is. Because then tomorrow you're going to get
tomorrow
all depressed.
Tomorrow sucks.
Yeah.
It's downhill from there.
It's like, all short day
it's
after
It's not going to be
day.
Another good day until, I don't know, the middle of December.
This is where Scott's head is. This is where Scott lives, in these weird places on the calendar. You don't know what today is, do you? And I'm like, oh, boy, it's National Donut Day. I don't know what I'm missing here. The longest day of the year. Yes, June 21st.
Now, National Donut Day, having that on the longest day of the year?
That'd be amazing.
That would be... Put me in a round room with a rubber suit on.
What does that even mean? It sounds disgusting.
It's more than I can handle. It's overload sensory.
I want to go back and just revisit one thing that was said by Ryan Smith. And it's less about it doesn't have to do with the UFC, although that's a huge get for the Jazz and for the arena and for Salt Lake City, frankly. But I do think that this is going to be an interesting one. The most interesting thing to me is as soon as I heard this, I thought this is a Scott Mitchell loves this statement. So that's where we're going to start things off here is with the cut right here on Unrivaled.
There we go.
The other question. Undeniable, unrivaled, top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
All right, the cut brought to you by University of Utah Health. At University of Utah Health, you get the same great care that the Jazz, RSL, and the Utes all trust. Visit uofuhealth.org for more information. It's uofuhealth.org. Huge day tomorrow for the station. We're going to be down, of course, at BYU Football Media Day. Coming up on the show, just to preview a little something for you, we've got Mitch Harper, our BYU insider for KSL Sports.
It's hard for me to go down there.
No, it's not. Nah, you actually are fine.
They give me limited access. They're like, we don't want you wandering
this
around the
buildings.
This
door doesn't open for you.
You're like the enemy.
Look, you're wearing blue today. We're halfway there.
I have to. This is Detroit Lions blue.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I have to be escorted around the building. Yeah.
No, it's
there's an ankle bracelet.
They allow
on me.
They allow me to escort you around.
Yeah.
If I'm an alum, I get special access to walk you around.
And I don't know that I want to go in all the buildings.
But there's only one we're going to be in. It's a broadcast building. And that's where we're going to be. But also Greg Wrubell, voice of the Cougars, is going to join us a little bit later in the show. We're going to break down what we can anticipate in this final year of independence and the final year of the independent era of the BYU Football Media Day. Also what to expect. I want to jump into the first thing that just punched me in the mouth on the whole on Ryan Smith. And when I was listening to it on my drive on the way in, I thought fascinating stuff, because we as fans get bogged down in just we will get in the tank on anything. Jersey colors is one of those things. And it is a massively important thing. I don't want to discount how important a brand or a rebrand is. I do think that we freak out a little bit too much about it. I think Ryan Smith knows a thing or two about what the research was that they put in to be able to get those jerseys. Everybody's freaking out about it. And I've never cared about the rebrand, because I know that my kid will say today that the jersey's ugly, that they look too much like the Oregon colors, right? The black and yellow and white jerseys. And I know he's going to own one in probably 8 months. That's the way that this works. But the reality is that when I heard this and when I heard the discussion, when it was brought up about the jerseys, and I know that Ryan Smith was probably like, that's fine, let's just get this over with and let's have the chat about it. The more important thing is, in the middle of all this, what he's really talking about. Here's, so take a listen. Here's what Ryan Smith said on Hans and Scotty today.
Look, I think, well, like, let's just address that head on. I think that when we look at this, first of all, I think I actually like how I like our fan base. Like, fans short for fanatics. And we are incredibly lucky in Utah that we have such a passionate fan base. That's one of the reasons why we're here.
Yeah.
Like, we would not be here with this team if we didn't have that fan base. They care about everything. So I don't run away from that. Like, I actually enjoy that. When I see people, I love the fact that everywhere I go, there's people wearing a Jazz hat or a Jazz shirt. The passion's here. And I think more than anything, like, I just want to bring them a championship. Like, that's it. Like, and the amount of effort that we'll go through, or pain or noise, to get a parade is pretty incredible. Like, I watched the parade with Steph, and, like, that's what we want. And so when it comes to decision-making, like, and the rebrand or some of the branding and the jersey stuff, we really wanted to bring, and I know people say it's an afterthought, we really wanted to bring purple back. And we haven't been purple in 20 years. Like, it has not been part of our color palette. We've had it back twice. And what we rolled out, we'll have 4 purple jerseys in 3 years. And the brand's an evolution. So don't ever take a snapshot of the brand. It's changed every 5 years. Like, it is an evolution, and it's a living movement that will continue to happen till we get to the spot. And we simplified and made it a little more clean. And, you know, there's probably fair criticism that maybe we went a little too clean in some areas. But, you know, I think where we go from here, and when fans see it on the court, you know, I already got data back that, you know, online the number one selling item, which was crazy, was purple. Like, it came in hot. Everyone bought it. But when people walked into the team store, they bought the black and yellow, which shows that when people see it, they're gonna do it. And, you know, the criticism, change, it's fair. But don't take a snapshot because we're going to be in a different spot, and we'll get to a point. Our ultimate goal, though, is I'm very envious of some of the teams where, whether it's Boston or Chicago, where there is a color palette that you know that that's your team's color palette. And when it's game day, like the entire I-15 is lined up around that, and that would be nice. And it's not that we don't have that. It's just we're in a spot where with the – it's a little tricky. I mean, you've got three purple teams in the league, two other purple teams in the league that is a little challenging. And you also have how fast the brands or our agreement with Nike is rolling things out. And so it's real easy to get out there. And so what we're trying to do is just bring it in together. And, you know, I understand how passionate our fans are. But we've got to go make it work.
Ryan Smith talking about the jerseys for the first time publicly with Hans and Scotty today.
There's a lot there.
There's a ton there. And honestly, it was a little bit of a, you know, you had the two – there were conversations about jerseys on two sides of a – we want to get to a championship, and we want to get to the parade. And you had this little pause where he was like, I saw Steph in that parade. I want that. And that's the part that I think that you and I sort of go, that's the only thing that matters. I mean, I know that that's where a lot of Jazz fans are too. Ryan Smith is a businessman, and he is exceptional at what he does. And he knows every part of this already, about the jerseys, where they fit in, about these things. But I think that people – may lose sight on the jersey stuff. And I've said, I don't really care that much. Once they rolled them out, you went, not a huge fan of it. But guess what? I'm going to get used to it like we did. Every 5 years, they rebrand this, Scott. The question is how often do the Jazz get to the NBA Finals? And it's not very stinking often. How do they get back there? That's what Ryan Smith, I think you really feel like they want to get there. And this is a very small part of it. And I don't care about the jerseys.
I actually think the jerseys are very important to Ryan Smith. I think the color is very important to Ryan Smith. I don't think it's an afterthought.
No, he knows where it fits, for sure.
There's a meticulous process going on with rebranding the Utah Jazz. And so if you want to talk about what it looks like, what it feels like, part of that is the whole thing of saying, this isn't how the Jazz used to be. When you're a guy like Ryan Smith and you are an entrepreneur at heart, like you have a lot of guts, okay? Like you know that, you know, 1 minute you might be so in debt, people might be calling you so crazy for trying this new business and just going out on a limb, and being able to succeed at it because you do this meticulous work and you do all of these things that most people aren't willing to do because it's uncomfortable. And so for the Jazz to kind of get uprooted from what everyone's been used to, and you get an entrepreneurial-minded person like Ryan Smith, and, you know, you look at the Golden State Warriors. Their owner goes, yeah, I'll pay $500 million to win a championship. You know, Ryan Smith goes, I want the parade. I mean, that's the thing they want. They want to be able to celebrate something that nobody's ever been able to do. And he sees what that can be and how impactful having that parade is. And so Ryan Smith is going to – he's going to find the best people to bring into the organization. He's going to find the best coach to bring into the organization. He's going to find the best players. He's going to spend the money. He's going to rebrand the team. He's going to put purple in. Whatever he has to do, Ryan Smith is going to figure out what it takes to bring a championship here. And when he said that, he said, you know, I'm not a basketball guy. When they hired Danny Ainge, I'm a fan, but I need to understand this business. And part of me understanding it is surrounding myself with the very best people. And we're all going to figure this out together, which to me, if you're a Utah Jazz fan, you have to keep that in mind. Because I think there's going to be a process of some growing pains, of some entrepreneurial experiences here as fans of the Utah Jazz, that it might get uncomfortable for a couple of years. It might get uncomfortable. Some of the players maybe you thought would be here, or maybe they're going to be asked to do different things, or, you know, you're going to get a coach in here that maybe you're not sure of. And the team goes through some growing pains, and you're going, well, why'd you get this guy? This team is terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, think of the Celtics. Like in January, everyone's like, get rid of all this. So I think you have to, in the short term, expect pain. You got to expect pain as a Jazz fan. But in the long term, you know, and so it's kind of like, what kind of investor are you? Are you a day trader? Are you in and out in the market quick? Or are you one of those long-term, long-play investors and say, okay, I'm in this for the long haul. We're going to have some corrections. We're going to have some ups and downs. But overall, we're going to get where we want. We're going to get that. We're going to get that parade.
That's interesting. You said that about the long-term view of it as a fan. I think you and I at one point had a discussion about who's that. Who are the people that say, I'm done now with my fan, with that. I've been a fan my whole life. Have you seen that on social media before? Somebody goes, I've been a fan my whole life, and I'm done. That.
Right, sure.
I saw a guy who got on there and said, these jerseys, I don't even know who this team is anymore, and I can finally say, I'm done with this team. And I went, whatever. And then somebody said, they trade Rudy Gobert, I'm done. You know, and you go, there's just no way. I don't think people really do walk away from that. I really don't think that when they act like they're going to walk away from a team because of the jerseys, let me just tell you, too, something that I've learned more and more over my time working in the sports world and being in arenas or with ownership or watching how ownership works, talking to you about the different franchises you work for, that you played for. You cannot imagine how different. I just assume every one of them is a well-oiled machine that works amazingly, and maybe they lose, and you go, shoot, we lost this year. But, man, we are a churning, well-oiled machine. We know what we're doing all the time, and it's not the case.
Probably most of them are not well-run.
Right, and this is not one of them. This is not one of those franchises that doesn't know what it's doing. This is not a guy who goes halfway into a project, right, Ryan Smith? They've never gotten that vibe. The Jazz are brought up constantly as an amazing organization because the Millers started it one way, and Ryan Smith, I think, is going to be even better. So whatever version of ownership you have, look at it like the locker room that you might have with the Jazz too and go, I don't think that this is the version of the team that we can actually get to a championship with. And maybe that was the way it was with the ownership, right? And maybe that's the way it was. I look at this and I go, Ryan Smith sees the jersey stuff exactly for where it needs to be within what the franchise has to accomplish. Okay? It's a brand. And look, rebranding happens across everything, right? I don't care what your favorite brand is. You've watched it be rebranded time after time. You know, it's just the way to the Apple computers were one thing when I was a kid growing up, and Apple is a totally different thing now, right? You think about the rebrandings at every one of your companies that you've ever been a part of.
The Golden State Warriors were nothing to talk about a few years ago.
Right.
They were nothing.
My entire growing up, they were terrible.
They had a horrendous arena that they were in. They're now in a state-of-the-art arena. It all changes. The thing for me, there was a small thing that Ryan Smith said that really spoke volumes to me. And because he's a businessman, he's this entrepreneur, he goes, you know, one thing I know about what is here with the Utah Jazz is it's an amazing fan base, a passionate fan base, a rabid fan base. You can tell that when you go into the arena. You can tell that when you, like you said, you walk around town. People are always wearing Jazz gear.
And it won't change. So it won't change.
So we had show and tell yesterday, right?
Right. I brought this
playbook from when I played with the Miami Dolphins, and I was thinking about, okay, what could I bring in? What is like one of my most cherished things as far as memorabilia, or, you know, or just whatever. And as I thought about it, and this is gonna sound crazy, but it's very true. It's what I value above anything else. I have a basketball, NBA basketball. Signed by John Stockton and Karl Malone.
How'd you get that, bro?
I have connections.
What, you asked your equipment manager? Give me a pack of Rice Krispie Treats and John Stockton and Karl Malone ball.
When I was in college, in the summer, I played on the Utah Jazz summer softball team. So I played with it was actually the trainer, the athletic trainer. And so I always got tickets wherever I was playing in the NFL. When the Jazz came to town, I always would get tickets. And I'm like, hey, can you get me a hat? You know, I was asking for anything. Hey, I need a basketball signed from Stockton Malone. And he's like, no problem.
That's amazing.
But they didn't sign. They didn't actually sign or even sign something together very rarely. But my point is, I'm a huge Utah Jazz fan. Like to me, my basketball.
Yeah, what color was the ball, though? Come on. What color was like the insignia on the ball?
It was an NBA basketball.
Just a regular ball.
Yeah, just signed it.
It wasn't one of those special white on one side.
No. All right. It's like it was like someone said, here, sign this NFL football. Right. You know, it's just a game ball.
Sure.
My point is, when he talked about fans, like, I get being a fan of the Utah Jazz. Like, I hate when they lose. I understand when the fan goes, I'm out. I'm done with this.
You do it every other game.
But what I really appreciate from Ryan Smith, he goes, if the fan base wasn't as passionate as it is, we wouldn't be here. And for him, he sees a massive opportunity that, because if you have a business and you don't have customers, what do you have? And so he's like, how do I take my customer base and grow it, but also make it happy? And you do that by winning a championship. Yeah. Like, he's a fan too. So I'm really interested, and I'm very intrigued by what all of the stuff the Utah Jazz are going to do, because it's not going to be status quo. And there are going to be things that are so uncomfortable for us to bear and watch. And probably who they hire, people might scratch their head and go, is that really the best guy for this? But you have to believe that they are definitely vetting out whoever the coach is. I mean, they're not leaving any stone unturned. But
that's the part I was saying about the organization feels like, again, you've told me about, and we've watched. We get a little peek behind the curtain sometimes when we see what the Washington Commandos are doing with Dan Snyder, and you go, holy cow.
They're the worst organization.
That's a dumpster fire.
Just horrendous.
We will say dumpster fire about anything, about like any situation that's kind of going wrong. But that's an actual, like, you look at the Jazz, they are not poorly run, and they won't be, I think, under Ryan Smith ever. There are too many people who care around here. The fan base is too rabid. I think that the most important thing that you see, and even them adding the UFC coming to Utah, that's a massive deal for the entire state. Less about like whether or not you're even a UFC fan or not. Recognize the fact that this is a draw that is different than other draws that you get for other sporting events that are coming to this arena. And Hans and Scotty were talking about, I don't know, the ticket prices, things like that. I'm already seeing. Okay, so I went to Vivid Seats just to kind of see where some tickets are at. The average lower bowl ticket, you ready for this? The average lower bowl ticket for UFC coming to Utah in August, to Vivint Smart Home Arena, Usman and Edwards, huge card. The average ticket price, according to Vivid Seats, looking around here, is $975, okay, for the lower bowl. Upper bowl's around $450, okay? There are tickets that are relatively close to the ring that are between $3,500 and $6,500. Scott's looking at me weird, like, hey, but let me tell you what that is those are tickets that are going to get purchased, because people are going to come from everywhere to come to this fight. Ryan Smith sees this entire thing as being an important deal for the entire state of Utah. UFC coming here, the Jazz getting the coach that is going to change everything, the jerseys that you, whether or not you love them or not, are going to be, cross your fingers, iconic. But let me tell you, too, he just said every 5 years we do some sort of a refresh on this brand. You might not see this set of jerseys might not see a world championship. Is it the next 5 years of what the iteration of these jerseys are going to be? You know, purple is going to be part of it. How is that going to look? And that's why I think what was tremendously important today about Ryan Smith and Dana White being in town talking about this event was that Ryan Smith was like, I want to be the best. I'm bringing massive events here. I'm bringing the Jazz to a different level, hopefully with this. Just trust me here, right? And that's what I kind of got from this is I'm as big of a fan as anybody you'll ever meet. And so the guy who sends an email and goes, you're not carrying the torch that was passed to you by the Miller family. You're making it. I watch people totally tear Ryan Smith down on social media. You have no idea what this franchise means. The Millers, we're doing. You don't think this guy is invested? He's just paid $2 freaking billion for this. And he's ready to spend more. Anyway, those are my thoughts.
Well, I'm impressed that you tied UFC into all of this.
Well, I think that they're there today, like Ryan
Smith. Shocked at the ticket price. I get it. I understand. I mean, I know.
Massive, right?
I know. But I'm I've always been a believer of you've got to have this championship mindset, and you have to change your focus and your perspective. And until you do, it's never going to change here. You know, Danny Ainge talked about, I don't know what the culture of the Utah Jazz is. I come from one where they win championships.
Just because I have ties to Utah doesn't mean that I know what Jazz DNA is.
And so, again, you have to be excited, I think you have to be a little tempered in your excitement, knowing that getting it done and right is going to be a little bit painful, and it's going to take some time.
All right, when we come back, we've got some I usually don't like to talk a ton about golf just because, you know, I don't know. I know it doesn't move the needle a ton for people, but this is where the sporting world is at right now, is the competitive nature of pick up the magnifying glass and look what's going on with the PGA Tour and the LIV Tour. Another big piece of movement today with another big player joining the LIV Tour from the PGA. And then also the PGA saying, we got to do something quick, and they're going to start paying. They're going to start paying more. And we'll talk about it next. We've got more to go right here. Unrivaled continues. It's 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Stay right here with us.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Your home for the best coverage of the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, and Aggies.
Y'all ready?
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
It's our show, all right?
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Thanks for being with us. Tomorrow, by way of announcement, we're going to be down all day at BYU Football Media Day. 4 o'clock, BYU Insider for KSL Sports. Mitch Harper is going to join us. Sean O'Connell, OC, is going to jump on with us, talk a little bit about the UFC event that's coming to Utah in August. And also, we'll sneak some college football chat in there. Should we?
Do you want some dumpster fire scenarios?
I guess.
Can I throw a dumpster fire scenario at you? I just realized today.
I love it, yes.
That
please.
I think would be absolutely just, it would be so awesome if it actually happened.
Oh, awesome. So dumpster fire's not a good thing, Scott.
Well, no. It's one of those things where, we like to watch the train wreck. Well,
right.
Because we're not a part of it. So
a schadenfreude. We like to see other people.
Yes.
Having an awkward situation so we can look and go, yes, we want to watch this.
No, and when I tell you, you're going to go,
okay.
Yes.
Let me hear it.
All right, so Deshaun Watson.
Oh, boy, what a friggin' mess.
What if Deshaun Watson is suspended? Because something's going to happen. Like, he's going to get some kind of suspension.
Yeah, the NFL's going to hit him. Yeah.
Let's just say they're suspended for a year. They still have Baker Mayfield. And Baker Mayfield comes back.
Ooh.
Plays lights out. Like, lights out. Takes him deep into the playoffs.
AFC championship game. Takes him into overtime.
And then what? What if he took him to the Super Bowl?
You know how this works. All that is.
And here's Deshaun Watson, $230 million fully guaranteed.
You know what, though?
And they're playing Baker Mayfield.
You know what? You know how it is. You've taught me this. When a guy does something like this, they've already broken up with Baker Mayfield.
Right.
They'd be forced to be in that situation. It would be awkward, but they would actually benefit from the fact that this guy is worth more, right? Because then they'd still get rid of him.
Yeah, but what if they go, well, maybe we don't want to get rid of him. And what if Baker Mayfield goes on and goes to another team and just and Deshaun Watson hardly even plays.
But we're watching this happen.
And it's $230 million they're stuck with. Like, there's no way out of it.
So you're just excited for what if they have to pay out $230 million and never really get anything out of
that?
The guy.
That is such a risky move.
Well, think about it though, Jimmy G. Garoppolo's been. I mean, he's been a pretty successful quarterback for the 49ers, and they're still like, anyway, moving on. Like, they just don't care. They're just like, ah.
Well, yeah, but they didn't also pay him $200 and $30 million fully guaranteed.
See, you do like to see other people suffer a little bit. You go, ooh, hey, Browns.
Well, no, I just think it's a scenario that could be extremely awkward for the Cleveland Browns.
But you
Browns.
Know that the Cleveland Brown accountants had to have this conversation with the head management and go, you realize we're on the hook for this no matter what.
And it's like, this guy better be right as rain. Like, this guy cannot, like.
Yeah, so the newest.
And then, do you want to talk about, like, who's under, I mean, I hate to use the term hot seat.
Yeah, you
but,
hate it.
But Deshaun Watson, like, nuclear level hot, the seat he's on. If he sits out a year and then comes back, like, and they give him all this money, that guy better be so good.
I like where your head's at.
So yeah, the news. That's what I woke up
Deshaun
with
Deshaun Watson is in the news because 20 out of the 24 accusers have been settled.
Right.
As of today, according to his lawyer. Not a good look for anybody.
Yeah, you know how that works? They go, hey, two grand juries have decided not to indict on charges.
Right.
You're not going to get him criminally.
Yeah.
So you know what? And it's a crapshoot in a civil case. You might as well just settle and take some money. Terrible. I mean, that's kind of where it is.
Scott, spring's here. If you need that new look for your home, RGS Exteriors and Construction can give you that new look. Stucco, brick, vinyl, James Hardy, siding, whatever you need, they're going to take care of you. Get that new look in 2022. Give them a call, 801-280-3110. That's 801-280-3110, RGS Exteriors and Construction. So real quickly here, I just wanted to throw this golf news out there because I think that this is – supremely interesting on the side of what is going to happen. As soon as the LIV Tour started throwing these insane dollar figures at these players, when you start to see $100 million for this guy, $200 million for Phil Mickelson, it was reported that Tiger Woods had allegedly been offered $900 million to be a part of the LIV Tour. And we're all going, where's this money coming from? Now, what you have found out is, for sure, this amount of money is here to stay for now. And Brooks Koepka today is the next PGA four-time major winner that is going to apparently move over to the LIV Tour for just a first-year payout of upwards of $8 to $10 million. That's without any of the prize money that's attached to it. Now, the prize money is so insane. Now, the whole setup is they have no cuts, right? And they have these massive purses.
And then they have a purse inside the purse.
Right.
And so you play as an individual for the big purse.
Right.
And then you're part of a team.
Yes.
And if your team wins, then you get additional money.
Bottom line is tons of money, and a lot of these players are having a hard time saying no to it if they're getting approached. And so next year, the PGA Tour is responding already. And we said this when this started to happen. We go, if the PGA Tour doesn't figure out a way to start paying out their guys more, you're going to have a problem. You're going to have a real problem. Guys are just going to move over. And starting next year, the PGA Tour has said that the top 50 players in the FedEx Cup standings from the previous season are going to be invited to participate in 8 limited, no-cut events that will be purses of $20 million or more. Now, $20 million purse, what does that mean? For example, the Masters this year was $17.5 million purse.
Right.
So a no-cut purse.
Guys.
For fewer guys.
Yeah.
So a no-cut purse, you're looking at a massive payout here. So what's the deal? Suddenly the PGA Tour found a bunch of money?
Here to me, I'm going to call BS on the PGA Tour.
Uh-oh.
Okay? Because you can't talk out of both sides of your mouth. You can't do it. You're either we're this tour where you're vetted out by you've got to play and perform to get paid. Like, there's a cut. There's something on the line here. That's what they all talked about. I mean, Rory McIlroy goes, yeah, you know, that it's meaningful to have to go through and qualify for this tour. And every week you got to bring your game or you're not going to get paid. And the guys that win and the guys that consistently are the top players are the ones that get paid. And the whole argument for this has been, where's this money coming from?
Yeah.
And today, I don't know. I you know, because you hear a lot of you hear this Saudi investment fund is in things like Nintendo and all different kinds of legitimate businesses, and so who knows where the money is and where it's coming from.
Right, but the PGA Tour money was money that was sitting around there. They had it available. It's TV money, right? I mean, we're talking about sponsorships, TV money, all these things, and we were wondering, like, hey, PGA Tour, you've got to figure out a way to pay these guys because people who've been on the tour go, it is an absolute drag. Like, if you, even when you're playing your butt off and you're making the cut even, you're barely making enough to be able to get by to get to the next tournament in a lot of cases.
I don't know about that.
Well, no.
I mean, honestly, the top 100 players in the PGA Tour today make over $1 million. I mean, there's a lot of money on the PGA
Tour.
Sure
there is, but it's not nearly what it could be, and I think that's where the PGA Tour started getting called out.
But what they're saying, what the PGA Tour is saying, is that we're this purist, this is how golf should be, and you're taking this dirty money. And what I think they've really been afraid of is that they don't want to have competition. And so is it really about dirty money, or are you just throwing shade on the LIV Tour just so you're not going to have this
that
competition?
One. It's that one.
I know. and I call BS on it, right? And like sir, you're going to throw this tour under the bus and have everyone believe that the money is, you know, that these are all evil, bad people. I don't know if they are or they're not. I don't know the PGA Tour is good or bad, you know, people, because you have to wonder sometimes.
It's a 501(c), Scott. Come on, it's a charity group. So is the NFL.
I have to.
Remember that whole thing? They're like, yeah, the NFL's a charity. Nonprofit.
If the LIV Tour could get a player, though, that could be the face of it, that could be the Darth Vader, that could be just the evil, you know, the guy that went from the light side to the dark side, or
this
whatever.
This is the bad guys.
Brooks Koepka is that guy.
Yes.
I mean, here he was at the U.S. Open going, oh, it's just awful that you're throwing shade.
Quit asking me about it. Come on, we're here to play golf.
And then he was talked into the dark side.
You know what this is? The LIV Tour, I just decided, is it's the team from Iceland, from the Mighty Ducks, right? Aren't they, like, all in black? And they're, like, wearing full black gear. And they're just, they're scary. They have a ton more money. They're the bad guys. And you got this ragtag group of Mighty Ducks that's the PGA Tour. It's like, yeah, right.
So, as I thought about this, like, because it was always a question when I played football. Do you take the money or do you take the legacy? Because this is kind of that choice. Are you in this because you just want to make a lot of money? Or are you in this because you just love this game? And I'm just telling you, that was a legitimate feeling and concern. I don't know if it was a concern, but a perspective in the NFL. Oh, you're just playing for the money. And the point was, if you were playing for money, it wouldn't mean as much to you. You wouldn't try as hard. You would just kind of, if you actually got paid, you'd kind of go on coast mode. It was a real thing, a very real thing.
Every one of these guys that's on the LIV Tour right now, whatever list of people, like right now, what the list is made up of right now, I can't say, maybe going forward you're going to see, when you have a good guy, like when you have a nice guy come over, every one of these guys to me already feels like, oh yeah, Brooks Koepka, that makes sense, him going over. Phil Mickelson, yeah, I could see Phil over on that side doing that.
Bryson DeChambeau,
yeah. Patrick Reed, these are all guys that you kind of look at sideways anyway and go, yeah, I could see you jumping over there. But the thing is that all those guys on that side right now, I could say, yeah, it's for the money.
Right.
Why not? But here's my other thing.
You know what?
Why freaking not?
It's for the money for everybody.
Why not?
If everyone at the end of the day would just be honest and say, you know what, I just want to make a whole lot of money in this. Don't give me this. It's my legacy. Right. It's all this. It's like, I want to get paid.
I'm about the purity of golf. Anyway, NetJets, if you want a spot on my arm, and Workday, if you want KPMG, if you want a hat spot, I'll be on there for you. Like, they will put anybody on that shirt. Like, come on, man. This is all about the money.
I think the guys that are afraid to do it are they're probably trying to figure out how can I do this at the end of the day. This reminds me of when the USFL first came out. You remember Steve Young got like this $40 million contract, and all these players got these just crazy amounts of money. And it's like, wait a minute, you're going to go to the USFL? The USFL that plays in the spring and like has no fan base.
So ridiculous.
As opposed to the NFL. Like, and that's really what this is all about. And you know what the player said? Absolutely. I'm going. I want the money.
How about the money?
It's all about the money. Charles Barkley said it.
Hey.
He goes, look, you give me $200 million, I'd kill a relative for that. I might even kill a relative I like for $200 million.
Terrible. Dude, the UFC fighters, what are they in it for?
Huh?
That's the money, man. Speaking of which, right?
So I'm doing this radio show for the money.
I know. Oh, I thought this was a charity situation. Come on.
It's a 501(c)(3).
I'm just, I'm a nonprofit. I'm Scott Mitchell, nonprofit. That's how you, like people have like MD after the name. You're Scott Mitchell, 501(c). That's me. I'm in it for just the goodness of this thing. We're going to take a break. We've got more to chat about coming up, like I said, in about 15 minutes or so. Mitch Harper is going to join us, give us a little preview of what BYU Football Media Day is going to look like in 2022, and then what it's going to look like in 2023. And then Greg Wrubell also joining us next, I guess, at the 5 o'clock hour. And OC, Sean O'Connell, is going to join us as well, give us a little bit of a tidbit. If you're not – I want him to paint the picture of how big this event coming to Salt Lake City is. And so if you want to go back, you can download the podcast. Hans and Scotty, they had Dana White on. They had Ryan Smith on. Just the full download. We played a chunk of it in that first segment of this show. And so, man, we're just all over this thing. This is huge for the state of Utah. So we're going to jump in. We got What Are the Odds around the corner next. More to go right here. It is 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. It's unrivaled.
What are the odds?
Okay, sir, the bet is to you.
All in, baby!
You'll know exactly. More or less. What's going to happen?
This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
All right, welcome back. It's Unrivaled. 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Thanks for being with us. Let me see here.
Do you know Kellogg's?
What are the odds? Heard of it. Are you familiar with American Airlines? Just say a brand that's like everybody knows.
There's like Tony the Tiger.
You had Pepsi before?
Sun Bowl, right?
It is the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl, okay. Yes.
They made, for one of their product lines, $11.4 billion last year.
How much?
On this certain product.
Oh, okay.
You know what it was?
Grape Nuts.
Cheez-Its.
Oh, yeah.
Pringles and Pop-Tarts. $11.4 billion.
I think there's a product where you just get a box that has all those things in it.
Like Cheez-Its.
Dude, Cheez-Its is my... Honestly, Scott?
Yeah.
Soda weight loss? You could just tell me to get off of Cheez-Its and I would have lost the same amount of weight.
Yeah. That would have been your food plan?
Listen, when I was a kid...
You can have anything, just get off the Cheez-Its.
No, I tell my kid this all the time because he's small for his age. And he's like, well, how big were you in your mind? I said, dude, I was 220 when I was in seventh grade. I was like, not where you want to be. And you know how I got there?
So instead of biscuit, they should have called you Cheez-It.
Cheez-It, dude.
Cheez-It.
So you, okay.
He's one Cheez-It child.
I'll just give you
200 pounds.
Here, let me just tell you something.
Although the Cheez-Its are small, you probably need like
Can I give you one of my... I have these fat guy confessionals all the time. Like, I confess my fat guy sins.
Just tell me. No one else is listening.
No, okay. This is just between you and I. Yeah. So just put up the old confessional booth here. I'd come home from school. This is part about being like a latchkey kid, too, because it was a little bit out of control. I'd find it. My parents would try to hide it. It was worse. The fat kid will sniff it out.
So
my mom would get the Cheez-Its. We had six kids, and I'm the sixth, right? She'd get the bag of Cheez-Its. Which I didn't know that Kellogg's owned it. Sunshine was the one who made it back when I was a kid.
All right.
And I would get a bowl, like a big bowl.
A Jethro bowl.
It was one of those, like, the salad bowl that you're like, wow, there's a lot of salad in here. Yeah. Not the salad bowl for a full family.
I understand.
Like,
yeah.
It's the one that you get for your ice cream. Huge. And I'd get, two handfuls of Cheez-Its on there. Don't shake your head because it gets worse. And two big old scoops of... cottage cheese on it.
Oh.
And I mix them together.
Well, the cottage cheese is healthy.
Yeah, not in this amount.
It balances it out.
Dude.
Now, I know a lot of good things go with cottage cheese, but I've never heard of Cheez-Its.
Oh, my goodness. The Cheez-Its were, a real problem. They still are. My kids buy them periodically, and I have to,
stay away from them.
Yeah. All right. Scott, what are the odds goes like this? I give you a scenario. You give me a 0 to 100% chance that thing will or will not happen. And then, bonus points for a jersey number that is associated with that. Okay?
All right.
Let me just go off of what Ryan Smith was talking about with the jerseys and how – and he said it. He goes, I think that, we went with like a pretty – a clean look. And maybe we got a little bit too clean with it, maybe a little bit too simplistic maybe with the design. Threw it out there, right? Because that's, I think, probably the biggest kickback. People going, what is this? It looks too plain, But I'm telling you, what are the odds that you're going to buy one of the new colors of something going on with the Jazz?
Me personally?
Yeah, you personally.
Oh.
Because like you're usually a guy that just, I mean, if I get you in a place and like if you go to a Jazz game, odds are you're going to buy something. Right. But like, are you totally thrown off by the color scheme or, and is purple like totally off limits for you? What are the odds that you personally are going to buy some purple gear?
So personally, with all of the color scheme change, none of it has really bothered me. It's like, okay, that's the colors they're going with now. Fine. I'd like to see what iterations they come up with this color palette, as they mentioned. I actually own a purple Utah Jazz hat, which I greatly appreciate and like. So, yeah, I like purple. I'd say the odds are high. I'd say let's go with I'll go with Johnny Morton, 87%.
Okay, that's pretty high.
Because he sent me a video, his highlight video.
Hmm. I'm gonna go with a. Let me see here. I'm gonna go with our guy from this last season. On during the Players Club,
Devin Lloyd.
No, Devin Kaufusi.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna go with a zero. Come on,
no, Devin Kaufusi.
Devin Kaufusi, University of Utah Utes. Although I'm wondering if he's still gonna be 90 because, Gabe Reed's coming in there and he wore 90 at Stanford. I want to see what that face off looks like.
See, now with these players getting money, they'll have to
negotiate. Not to pay each other like the NFL guys. I'm going to go with a 90, a Devin Kaufusi.
Kaufusi.
Both Ute and Cougar at some point in his career, 90%. There you go.
All right, I got one for you.
Yep.
So you know Gronk retired today.
Got it.
Which, yeah, right.
I just kind of go, meh.
This is a guy who goes, how can I get the most airtime, pub time I possibly can? And how can I just milk this thing for all? Because he to me feels like a guy that just likes to milk things.
Do you think yesterday his agent called and he goes, tell him I'm playing. And then today it was, tell him I'm retiring. Like he just.
Completely.
he just changed his.
Yeah. And he probably giggles over the whole thing because he probably thinks it's all funny. So what are the odds that Gronk's retirement?
Gronk, I want his new. Let's get that's the Western Family brand. Bring Gronk in here. He's not a very good tight end, but he's on the team. Gronk.
What are the odds
that he stays retired?
That his retirement is real this time. I mean, even Brady couldn't retire.
I know
permanently. Did you know that Gronk's only played 11 years?
I know. That's the thing is, I thought, well, you had a longer career than he did, but it feels like he's been playing for. I don't know, 21.
He's 33. And he acts like he's just, you know.
He's 33 years old.
On death's door.
I think that he's going to stay. I think it's that he stays retired. I think it's higher. I still think it's less than 50% because I could see him getting a call. Like somebody gets hurt and they call him up and he gets a nice little $2 million. That he stays retired, I'm going to say it's an Andre Kirilenko 47% chance.
$2 million? That wouldn't excite
No, for like two playoff today. Games. That's what he's going to come back for. Like
just for the playoffs?
Just the NFC Championship game and the Super Bowl. Boom. Shows up.
I'm going to give it a Carl Mach 55%. Houston Oilers.
All right. I'm going to ask you one here, Scott. What are the odds that Kyrie Irving signs with the New York Knicks? He's currently with the Nets, Brooklyn Nets, of course. Now, I saw this thing and said, where's Kyrie ending up next? At the Knicks, the Lakers, or the Miami Heat? I can't remember. It was all just huge market teams. And I thought, geez, of course. This guy's going to fail upward, right? So what are the odds that he ends up going to sign with the Knicks?
Phillip Rivers, 17%.
Oh, I was kind of along the same lines number-wise.
I just don't. The Knicks just doesn't. I don't think it moves the needle for. Yeah. You know, now if he goes, well, if I can play as many games as I did last year, I'll go play for the Knicks, which is not very many.
I'm going to go with a Hedo Turkoglu 15%.
Wow.
Remember him?
Yeah, I do.
Old Turkoglu. Those are one of my favorite names to say. Hedo Turkoglu, 15% chance. All right, let's take the break here. We'll come back. Mitch Harper is going to be with us around the corner here on 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone. He's our BYU insider for KSL Sports. So we'll jump in to see what kind of big news we could expect for tomorrow or what he's looking forward to as BYU is going to roll out its last independence era football media day. So stay with us. Unrivaled continues, 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, everybody, welcome on in. It's 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. It's Unrivaled. Alex Keery, former NFL quarterback Scott Mitchell to my right. Huge day in the state of Utah. Announcement, of course, the UFC's coming to UFC 278 coming to Salt Lake City. Dana White was in town. Ryan Smith, part of that announcement as well over at Vivint Smart Home Arena. And our own Hanson Scotty were also over there broadcasting live. And awesome pickups that they had with Ryan Smith and Dana White on the whole deal. We're going to have Sean O'Connell join us a little bit later this hour. Roll out a little bit how big this is, or how big the UFC really is. I think there are a lot of people out there who are like you, Scott, to go, yeah, I just never got into the fights. It's such a huge deal. It's such a massive deal. So we'll roll out and kind of see what that big picture is for Ryan Smith and Vivint Smart Home Arena to get that event to come here to Utah. First, though, speaking of big events, tomorrow, BYU going to have their football media day. That's where we're going to kick things off here with our BYU insider, Mitch Harper. It's the cut right here at the top of the hour.
The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled, top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
You head over to KSLSports.com. You can read Mitch Harper's byline, anything that has to do with BYU. He's on top of it. Tomorrow, a huge day for BYU. Today, they restructured some senior leadership for that Big 12 move, trying to make everything look a little bit like an athletics department would look inside these big programs. I think BYU was a lot of the way there. Mitch Harper joins us on the program right now. Mitch, what kind of moves happened today? And what is it in comparison, like, what does this really do for the program? What does it look like compared to other programs across the new Big 12 coming up in 2023?
It's very comparable. The most notable thing is that some individuals that were already in the athletic department, they've now been promoted to senior associate athletic directors, and they become kind of the right-hand people for Tom Homo. So now instead of having so many people in the athletic department report to Tom, a lot of those people now will report to these individuals being David Almodova and individuals like that. So and then they also hired a new individual from Clemson to lead up their social media efforts. So I think it's very comparable in that sense. And BYU is looking to ramp up its efforts, as you said, going into the Big 12 Conference because more than ever, they got to have a chance to kind of streamline the process and make it more efficient than ever before.
Why does it have to be his right-hand man? Why can't it be the left-hand man?
He's going to have to have him on both sides.
I'm the left-handed guy here. I feel
That's
slighted.
That's a good point,
I feel always slighted. Look, so much talk is even these hires. It's all about the Big 12. Yeah. How much of a concern is there that BYU is just going to kind of overlook this whole season? And is there really – what is the value of this season, too?
I think it's a valid point because honestly, you know, I pointed this out on Cougar Tracks last week. You know, there might be games against, you know, there's Baylor, there's Stanford, but in the grand scheme of things, what does it really mean? And that's always been a kind of a talking point in independence. And with so many underclassmen in the program, a lot of these guys could return. I think, you know, guys like Jaron Hall and Blake Freeland, they're going to be gone, probably Puka Nacua too. But, you know, there's a lot that's going to be part of BYU football in 2023. And we've seen a BYU program, you know, last year a lot of times where they played down to their competition and they looked like there was not that consistency week in, week out from BYU. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be a challenge, I think, to not look ahead to the Big 12. And I got to imagine a lot of the questions that players and coaches will field from the media members, and including myself, will be – centered around, you know, the Big 12, because honestly, I think that, you know, this year it'd be nice for BYU to get, you know, double digit wins and have another national ranking. But ultimately, I think everyone in the BYU fan base would rather have instant success in year one in the Big 12 Conference. That's going to matter a lot more than, you know, trying to get another 10 win season and end up in some third tier bowl game that ESPN slots them in.
That's what I was going to say.
Hawaii Bowl.
The Hawaii Bowl. Hey, Mitch, if it's Christmas Day, would your wife and kids allow you to go to the Hawaii Bowl? I mean, come on.
It would totally come with the catch of, well, we got to go too. And so I would say, Nate, you know, can the wife and kids go? Because I'm happy to cover it. I'm all in.
Hey,
you know me.
Nate, could you add a couple more people onto the old P card here?
Expense right.
account. The expense account is going to be actually at Ulani at the Disney Resort. No problem. It'll be on file. Okay, so for tomorrow, like you were saying, I mean, it's one of those things that we are, you know, we're all looking forward to 2023. And frankly, I'll tell you too, having been at all of these in the independence era, having been at all of these media days, I know you know this feeling too, where you sit down and these announcements start to get made, the state of the program that Tom Holmo kicks off with Dave McCann, and everybody's sitting there going, okay, what's hopefully a big-ish announcement that's going to be rolling out? And tomorrow, they don't have to have it. Like, there's no, like, opponent. But is there something on the horizon that people could be like, hey, that's a really, really amazing thing? Is there some announcement that BYU could be making tomorrow that we might not necessarily be expecting for their media day?
I think that, you know, one thing that I'm keeping an eye on would be if they announce the 2023 non-conference schedule, which could tie into that first year in the Big 12. Because earlier this month, you know, when I asked Tom Holmo about that vacancy left behind by Tennessee, Tom said it was very close to being done, that non-conference schedule. He said it was just a matter of crossing some T's and dotting some I's, and that, as he put it, it would be announced very soon. So that could be something that maybe gets announced, because that could tie in to that future Big 12 era, what the non-conference slate will look like. And also, as we discussed, the bowl game, maybe what ESPN slides them in this year. Maybe they become an anchor of a specific bowl game. Right now, they're a ESPN bowl free agent, where they just go to one of the ESPN event bowls, but maybe they say, you know, you're going to the Hawaii Bowl, and make it official that, you know, if they're bowl eligible, they're going to be going to the Hawaii Bowl. So I could see that as well.
We talked to Dave McCann yesterday, and he's a big part of this media day for BYU. Is there another university that could actually pull off a media day for an independent program like BYU has done? I mean, it's very thorough, very well done, very impressive. But, you know, you think of so many independent schools, and, you know, maybe they have a media day, but it just seems like BYU has that capability of pulling off a pretty remarkable media day.
Yeah, I mean, the only other thought that I would think of would be like a Notre Dame. You know, they could probably pull it off with their connections to NBC and maybe Peacock streaming, stuff like that. I know they've done things in the past. But, yeah, BYU, with their fan base, as passionate as it is, it's, you know, despite the season still being about 10 or so weeks away, there's year-round passion for BYU football. And I think that's what makes it unique, in that they're one of those programs that has a year-round following. It's not just in the season. You know, Cougar fans want to know about BYU football all year long, all the time, and it's good for us, because, you know, they enjoy any sort of BYU football content. But yeah, it is a well-ran production, and it's a great chance to, you know, talk with all these players and coaches, get a summer check in before fall camp. And I'll kind of miss having these media days. I know that BYU's communication staff has indicated they might come up with some different things maybe in the future after spring ball for the media. But it's going to be different only having two players and Kalani Sitake as the only representatives at BYU at Big 12 media days next year at AT&T Stadium. So that'll be an adjustment,
Well, Mitch, it's not all about BYU at the Big 12 media days. I mean,
it would be for
us. You got to have a few other folks in there.
You know
too.
What that means, though? I mean, it's like the way we do Pac-12 media day. I mean, BYU's first Big 12 media day is going to be a huge freaking deal. I mean, I guarantee we're all going to be there. I guarantee that we're going to be doing the same thing that we do at Pac-12 media day, and that is just broadcast as much as we can there, because everybody does want to know who these opponents are, who BYU is going to be taking on. Yeah. Everybody does want to know who all these new players are going to be. The transfer portal has made it to where you have, within a conference, you have guys popping from team to team now, and it's going to be – it's exciting stuff. So I think that, you know, next year it's going to look different, and BYU will have something And to have the resources of a broadcast building like they do and the huge broadcast ability they have is a huge deal. But tomorrow, who are the people that you look at and you go, I can't wait to talk with these players or these coaches, ones that we could kind of anticipate hearing some really, really great stuff from?
Well, I'm really curious to talk to Alliance Atuiaki. You know, that defense, there's no question about it. They took a step back, and I think by season's end, no one – any team that BYU would have faced in college football, no one was scared of that defense anymore. I mean, UAB, Georgia Southern, USC with a freshman quarterback, they all had stretches where BYU was just getting carved up. And they I know you can point injuries, but, hey, a lot of teams in November have injuries. It's got to be more than that. And, you know, what adjustments do they make to that defense? What, you know, because Kalani Sitake pointed out in spring ball, he wants an aggressive style. He wants more explosive plays, as he put it, in spring ball. So what's Elisa Tuiaki, his plans to deliver what his head coach is wanting coming up this fall? I think that'll be fun to talk to him. I think also getting caught up with some of the linebackers like Peyton Wilgar, Keenan Peely. It's easy to forget the talent that was in that linebacker room with who they were trotting out at season's end. But there's a lot of guys in that linebacker spot that, you know, maybe could be good enough to hear their name called as NFL guys next year. Excited to talk with Wilgar and Peely, who come back from season-ending injuries a season ago. And I also, you know, want to get caught up with, you know, some of the players like a Kingsley Suamataia and a guy like, you know, Gunnar Romney, who's been matured. I mean, he's a guy that's been around since 2018 and, you know, kind of pick his brain about his season that he wasn't expecting at this time a year ago to be back in Provo, but what's he doing to make the most of his opportunity to have a chance of having a pro career? So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of coverage tomorrow on KSLSports.com, and I'm sure with you guys in KSL Sports Zone, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It's always an eventful day, and hopefully there's some newsy items from a personnel standpoint. I know that's something I always look forward to, kind of dissecting the roster a bit with these coaches on a one-on-one setting. And, you know, just getting a better perspective and outlook of what BYU football is going to look like in 2022.
You know, when Alex was talking about going to the Big 12 media days in a year, and you think about being a fan of college football here in the state of Utah, and you're going to have access to football programs and an interest in football programs in Florida, in West Virginia, across the Midwest, Texas, in the Intermountain West, and on the west coast of the country, and between BYU and Utah in the conferences they're in. And that's exciting. I mean, you're gonna have a peek into so much of college football if you're a fan, and, you know, something to really look forward to. And I just had to make that comment. It wasn't really a question, but I do have a question. With Texas and Oklahoma leaving the Big 12, Where does the conference find relevance, and where do they have kind of that, I don't know, program, or what do they do to be considered a conference with clout?
Yeah, I think what works for the Big 12 going forward after Texas and Oklahoma, I think, is that they are programs in markets that care a lot about college football. And I think that's going to be something that can be very attractive and very appealing to their next media partners, is that these markets, in Salt Lake included, and BYU's, you know, worldwide following, they care about college football. And then that can't be said in all the Power Five conferences. I mean, even in the Pac-12, where USC's the king, they're the fourth best show in L.A. They are, you know, even with Lincoln Riley and all that all-star transfer that they have, they're the fourth best show in that market. Whereas everywhere else, you know, I know it's Kansas, but Lawrence and Manhattan, they love their college football. Kansas City loves college sports. It's going to be behind the Chiefs and things like that, but they are college towns that care. And I think that's something that's going to be massive, I think, for the Big 12. And, you know, during the Big 12 spring meetings, they had a presentation about their marketing, and Bob Bowlesby talked about things like their brands post Texas and Oklahoma are very appealing to the 18 to 44 range. And you think, what does that have to do with anything? I mean, but still, I think there is some recognition. There's some name value to these conference league. It's just a matter of identifying maybe who's going to be that next, you know, big time brand. But I think the thing is when you dive into the history of these programs, they've all had a lot of different success points, whether it be in college football and men's college basketball, that you can point to, and it gives you signs that maybe now they could take off and be something big. I mean, BYU, they could step into the Big 12 and be one of the top teams. I don't think that's a bad thing, because you're talking about one of the, you know, 8-10 winningest programs in college football over the last 50 years, a program that's had national success, whether it be, you know, that one national championship, a Heisman winner, Outland trophies. I mean, BYU has history that would say, yeah, that could be a blue blood brand, but they've never had the access of being a power conference team. And this platform now, without Texas and Oklahoma and this new Big 12, I think all these programs are going to be committed and invested more than ever to try to reach the heights that they've maybe never before experienced. And I think that's, again, one of the reasons why the Big 12 will be kind of so interesting, because there's not a clear cut pecking order. And I think it makes for a fan experience that might be unique in a world of college athletics, which seems to be so predictable year after year.
2019, Kalani Sitake had a 20-19 record overall in those first few years, 16, 17, 18, and 19. After his first 4 years as head coach, 2020, 2021, and now 2022, think about how crazy it was to go from that 2019 season. What has Kalani Sitake done just in the last three seasons that has made it to where now it feels like this is a guy who could be that next Lavelle Edwards type legend status at BYU as their head coach?
I think one of the big things is that he's maintained his recruiting classes. You're not seeing, so you're maintaining most of your personnel, and the guys that are leaving BYU primarily, they're maybe either getting maybe nudged out because, well, they didn't really show much those first couple of years, and there's a little bit of a surplus in numbers, or you know, academics, whatever it may be. You're not losing many guys that are difference makers. It seems like a lot of programs around college football these days, they're losing starters to the portal for NIL. That's not happening so far in Kalani's program. Now, NIL is still relatively new, and I'm sure it's going to happen eventually at BYU, but by simply just maintaining your numbers in recruiting classes, I think that's been huge for BYU, and I think that's why you've seen the improved depth in certain spots. Other areas, I think especially on the defensive side, it's got to get better. But I think that Kalani's also taken that approach from Lavelle of truly empowering his coordinators. And I think that what Aaron Roderick has done as an OC, I don't think anyone saw that coming to the level that he's experiencing right now. I mean, because when Ty Detmer got fired after the 2017 season, I don't think any BYU fan wanted Aaron Roderick as the OC, because they thought, well, he wasn't that great at Utah. Maybe he was micromanaged, who knows, but Kalani's given him the green light to do what he sees best. And it's just taken off to where this offense, they feel like they could be a top 10 offense this year. And I think that's going to be a big storyline tomorrow at Media Day, the potential of this offensive attack. So I think Kalani too has also just taken on a CEO role where, you know, he is the leader of the program. He's got the right people that he trusts in his organization to help him in areas. And, you know, I think that he just truly oversees the program and empowers his people around him. It's similar in that vein to Lavelle Edwards, the guy that he, you know, has aspired to be, he said in the past.
Speaking of coordinators and assistant coaches, how stable is that coaching staff? Are there potentials for guys to move on, even like a guy like A-Rod?
I think it's pretty stable right now because they all got new contracts back in January, new pay raises. So I think there's a feeling that they want to, you know, carry this over into the Big 12. But I think if you looked at guys that maybe could get poached, you know, I think Aaron Roderick would definitely be someone I think Group of Five programs would be wise to look at as far as a potential head coach because of the success he's having with QBs. And I mean, if Jaren Hall has another big year, which I think many people expect him to have, I think it'd be foolish not to look at Aaron Roderick if you're, you know, some Group of Five programs needing a head coach. And, you know, Ed Lamb's been tossed around in the past. I'm honestly kind of surprised that he's still at BYU this long. You know, I really thought he would have been someone that made the move to go to BYU to get back as a head coach, maybe at the G5 level or whatever it may be. But he's someone I'm sure would these in that same breath, maybe like Roderick as a potential G5 head coach. And I think then, you know, some of the position coaches too. But I think what makes this job attractive now to create job stability, I think, for them is that they like their head coach, that they're working for their boss. He empowers them, I think. And as I said before with you guys, I mean, they do get a day off. I think that matters. You know, they actually get that one day during the fall on Sundays. And I think, you know, because there's other guys that are former BYU players that are working in football right now, college football, and they're going 7 days a week and they're working 15, 16, you know, maybe 20-hour days round the clock sleeping in their office. And Kalani's pretty good about these guys having a little bit of balance despite, you know, not being in a world that's so demanding. And I think that lends itself to where you might want to just stay there, especially with being at a program now that's P5. But, you know, if the salaries are huge and you can't turn that down, especially in this day and age we're in now. But I think it's pretty stable at the moment for BYU as they transition to the Big 12.
Jack DeMooney basically live tweeted his entire trip to the Caribbean. So, you know, these guys are doing all right. You know, being okay.
That's right.
Mitch Harper, of course, BYU insider for KSL Sports. He hosts Cougar Sports Saturdays on KSL News Radio. We will see you tomorrow, bright and early, I guess, Mitch, as we're going to be broadcasting there all day, and I'm sure we'll chat again. Thanks for hanging out, man. We'll talk to you again.
Yeah, see you tomorrow morning. Talk to you guys later.
There you go. Save me a cheese Danish. Can we have a cheese Danish, Scott? No. It's not on the list.
Does it have Cheez-Its in it?
If it's a Cheez-It Danish, then I'm all over it.
Cottage cheese.
see, now I regret telling you that. Now Why? I regret telling you that. No, just because. All right. We'll take the break here when we come back. Huge announcement across the street at Vivint today as the UFC is going to be bringing UFC 278 to Salt Lake City. Ryan Smith and the CEO of the president of UFC, Dana White, making that announcement today. Sean O'Connell, OC, is going to join us a little bit. Of course, he had his time not just in MMA but in the UFC. And so we'll chat a little bit about how big this is and how big this fight's going to be, and also sneak in a little bit of Pac-12 discussion as well, as he, of course, hosts Pac-12 radio on SiriusXM. We've got more to go right here. Stay right here with us. It is 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. It's Unrivaled.
Attention.
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keering.
Attention.
With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
All right, everybody, welcome on in. It is 97.5 VKSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, former NFL quarterback Scott Mitchell, former University of Utah quarterback Scott Mitchell, too. And I've been corrected. You can't say former great. You were great. You will always have been great. But that's it. That's look, I don't want to short you on anything, Scott. So we'll always.
And it wasn't me that did the correcting.
I know. It was Dave McCann, of all people.
Yeah, really?
He said, show him some respect. I was like, geez, out of the BYU guy? Oh, my heavens. Joining us right now on the program, massive day for the state of Utah, massive day for Ryan Smith, the owner of the Utah Jazz and Vivint Smart Home Arena, and joining us on the program right now, OC, Sean O'Connell, joining us on the program, of course, has his own history with the UFC, covers, of course, the fight game, and also, of course, hosts Pac-12 on SiriusXM radio as well. And OC, let's start with the first hat, which was today's amazing event. Well, you kind of set it up for us. Like, how big of a deal is that for somebody who's not maybe a huge follower of the UFC? How big of an announcement is it to have UFC 278 coming here to Salt Lake City?
It's a really big deal because it's a numbered pay-per-view. They've come before. Back in 2016, they brought a very underwhelming card for one of their UFC fight nights, which, don't get me wrong, they're always, you know, really interesting shows. These are world-class fighters. There was one last week in Austin featuring Court McGee, who's a local guy, right? And you can see great fights on all those, but the UFC trots out the biggest and the best for the numbered pay-per-view events, and they're bringing Kamaru Usman, who's the top pound-for-pound fighter in the world right now, to Salt Lake City. And this, usually these numbered pay-per-views are reserved for Las Vegas, for New York City, mm-hmm. for Anaheim, for Dallas, for Chicago. The fact that Salt Lake City is getting this is exactly what Ryan Smith and Dana White both talked about today. It's a kind of an announcement of the potential for Utah as a big-time sports town, the way that Vegas has become one, the way that, you know, all of those cities that we kind of get jealous of that have NBA basketball, NFL football, Major League Baseball, NHL hockey. There's no reason why we can't start talking about Salt Lake City in the same vein as some of those places. And the UFC is starting to view the city that way.
So what is it about Salt Lake City that would be a draw? I mean, you want to hope for that, but what are they seeing? Why are they coming to Salt Lake?
Well, the economic profile of Salt Lake City has advanced pretty significantly in the past decade. As you guys are well aware, the population has boomed, as you guys are well aware. And if you go back historically for the UFC, they've got their numbers, right? They've got their statistics on viewership, on downloads, on streaming, and on pay-per-view buys. And Salt Lake City has always performed exceptionally well in all those areas per capita. The per capita thing kind of stinks when you're an underpopulated place, right? Because it's like, hey, good for you. Mm-hmm. High five. You're still a small town, but you know, you're big fans of us. Well, now we're graduating from that kind of quaint little sports burg into a place that's capable of hosting big time events like this. And I love that they're bringing the UFC here because we did well with the Olympics. A UFC pay-per-view is going to do really well. Obviously, the Utah Jazz continue to do well. And if we look at the big picture, we now have a billionaire owner of a professional sports team here that's working with another billionaire owner of a big-time combat sports league. And who's to say that this doesn't strike the interest or spark the curiosity of the National Hockey League, Major League Baseball? I'm a believer that this market could even support an NFL football franchise, although it'll never happen.
Amen, brother. I'm right there with you.
Scott's right there with you.
You know, we could. But these are the things that the little pebble that drops in the pond that hopefully has a significant ripple effect.
Green Bay, Wisconsin's a small place. Can't have a team there. Can't have one here.
I was looking at this, and I was listening to Dana White's comments today on Hans and Scotty's show, and he said, look, I go to places that basically make it easy for us to come there. And this is one of those places. I would have to imagine that this partnership with Ryan Smith and with Vivint is a lot to do with, hey, man, we want to make ourselves big, too. And so that partnership, be able to have Ryan Smith go, what do you need for us to be able to make it happen to where we can bring this thing here? And that's a huge sacrifice on Ryan Smith's part to say, whatever you need, man, we'll try to figure this thing out. Because I think that he knows how big this can be and how big it is for Vivint and how big it is for the state.
The man is nothing short of a visionary. Obviously, he proved that with his company, and that's why he put himself in a position to buy the Utah Jazz. But he's not a big combat sports fan, guys. This is not like some pet project for Ryan Smith where he's just like, oh, my gosh, I've loved the UFC since I was a little kid. Randy Couture and Chuck Liddell were my idols. That's not what this is. This is a guy who's like at best a casual fan of combat sports, who is recognizing an opportunity here for advancement of the sports market and for, you know, a big event for the community and all that kind of stuff, for a huge opportunity for the arena to set its gate record. That's one of the things that the UFC prides itself on. They charge an exorbitant price for tickets, and people still sell the places out. So basically every arena that they sell out, then that arena then announces like, oh, yep, we broke our gate record, our single day gate record.
Wow.
With, you know, $7 million or whatever it's going to be.
So how big is UFC? I don't know that I'm even a casual fan. And I'm not an enemy. It's just not something that I've really gotten into. How big is it? Like what is the audience? What's the interest?
Well, it's huge. It's big, very big in the United States, but it's a global sport that now has champions. UFC, the Ultimate Fighting Championship, has had a champion from every single continent except for Antarctica in its existence. So
they just have penguins in Antarctica. So.
Yeah. Well, you got to watch out for those emperor penguins. They're pretty big. But
Antarctica.
Someday Antarctica will produce a champion. You mark my words. No. But look, it's a global audience, right? And it does, the UFC does exceptionally well here in the United States for a product that's only 30 years old. The problem is, you know, sometimes we in the regular sports world will compare what the UFC is able to do numbers-wise, pay-wise, that kind of thing. And we compare it to the NFL that's, you know, 60, 70 years deep into its real history. The NBA, who's obviously much older. Major League Baseball, that's 100-plus years old. The UFC is 30 years old. Like, none of those sports at their 30-year mark were producing the kind of numbers and audiences and, you know, financial figures that the UFC is. So part of that's because of, obviously, distribution's a lot easier and better now than when those leagues were only 30 years old. But it's still a growth sport with already a huge domestic and global audience, and it's only getting bigger. It's so big that the UFC hasn't really even been able to capture a true monopoly on the market. There's Bellator, which is a competitor that has some of the best fighters in the world. PFL, who I announced for, that has some of the best fighters in the world.
Right.
Won championship over in Asia. So it's not like the UFC has not been able to really truly establish a monopoly like the NFL or the NBA has.
Sean O'Connell, you of course know him because he played at the University of Utah. What else could we throw out here, Sean? You've done the MMA thing. You've done the UFC thing. You've kind of covered it all, but you also host SiriusXM Pac-12 Today. Let's just ask you a couple minutes of Pac-12 questions here. We're a month away from Pac-12 Media Day. How much excitement is going to be going on? What's the thing that you are interested to see the most? Is it going to be asking Herm Edwards the tough questions, or is it going to be kind of getting to know what Lincoln Riley's got going on in his head as he's drinking from a fire hose there at USC?
Well, I don't care what's in his head. I want to see what's on the field on Saturdays from USC. We know that the guy who can recruit successfully. We know that he's got great offensive schemes. I want to know what the product is going to look like in this first year. And more importantly, I want to see if we can project what that product is going to look like in year three or four, when he should be competing for national championships, if he's living up to expectations. That's the big question for me. And I think that's the big question for everybody, is how successful is that marriage between Lincoln Riley's system and the talent that he should be able to get at USC. Oregon is very interesting. Again, you know, you got a guy who just coordinated one of the best defenses in the history of college football, who's now a first-time head coach at the University of Oregon. And that is a machine that is driven by Nike money, which is not a small thing. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the most relevant question for us locally is, does this team pick up right where it left off? Is this team better than it was a year ago when they won their first ever Pac-12 championship? Can you go down to the swamp and get the job done right out the gate? Like, is the buy-in as complete and significant as it needs to be for this Utah team to be in the conversation in week 10 to be in a college football playoff hunt? All of those things are very relevant questions, but the one that matters most to us is this team better than last year's team?
Yeah, that'll be an exciting game in Gainesville. George Kliavkoff, the new commissioner of the Pac-12, was recently, he talked about actually breaking away from the NCAA. And I was curious what your thoughts are on that. Is that, do you like that idea of the, I guess, the 10 conferences breaking away and kind of doing their own thing?
I do. I like it. I like the idea of it. The execution of it is going to be insanely difficult. And it's going to take a lot of buy-in and a lot of cooperation from leagues that I don't think are necessarily really bent on cooperating with one another, right?
Right.
Right now, the SEC controls, yeah. The SEC controls everything in football, in baseball, in college softball. They're pretty dominant in gymnastics. Financially, they're better off than everybody else is, right? And it's more likely that the SEC sees comments like that and is just like, gosh, you know what? He's right. We don't need the NCAA. But you know what else we don't need? The Pac-12. We don't need George Kliavkoff. We don't need Colorado and Oregon State and Washington State and, heaven forbid, Utah. They might just say, you know what we need? We need USC and UCLA, that big LA media market. Man, we really like Seattle, too. We want Washington. And maybe we'll take the Brainiacs from Stanford just for good measure, right? That I love the idea of 10 football conferences that are all kind of like near the same relevance to the national stage, getting together, figuring out rules, figuring out how they're going to enforce those rules, and figuring out the financial and distribution model for television rights, and just saying, thanks, NCAA, we don't need you anymore. We've already been operating pretty independently of you. But the problem is, as soon as you remove the NCAA oversight, you get into this you-know-what contest over who really has the most influence. And unfortunately for the Pac-12 conference, they're going to be behind the Big Ten. They're going to be way behind the SEC in terms of their clout in those negotiating rooms. And that means they have to, like, squat up like they did in this alliance that is only philosophical, is not actually a signed thing. And they have to try and figure out where their allies are. But, man, the SEC is the big you-know-what in the room, and that's scary.
Sean O'Connell, OC, on with us on the program today. We're looking forward to catching up, obviously, down in L.A. for Pac-12 Media Days, and we're looking forward to also seeing what your thoughts are on the fight when we get a little bit closer to that in August as well. OC, have a great afternoon. We appreciate it, man, and thanks for being with us.
All right, guys, tune in Friday night, ESPN, PFL, from Atlanta, Georgia. Talk to you soon.
Are you going to have a tux on?
I'm not a tux, but I have a pretty slick suit on.
I love
well,
the fight.
If it's a slick suit, we'll certainly tune in.
All right. OC, we'll be there, man. Thanks for being on the program. We're going to take a break here. More to go here on the program. It's 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. It is unrivaled.
For the best coverage of the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, and Aggies.
Y'all ready?
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
It's our show, all right?
On 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Everybody, welcome back. It is 97.5 VKSL Sports Zone. It's Unrivaled. Thanks for being with us. Hey, if you missed any of the show, and today's been a big one, you can go back and listen to the podcast editions of the show. If you missed anything, you can download it wherever podcasts are found, or download the KSL Sports app, and you can find every show, every segment right there at the touch of your fingers. Scott Davis Vision. And there's summer LASIK sales going on right now. Get rid of those contacts and glasses. Save $1,000. And, hey, if you're not doing the LASIK thing, Davis Vision offers routine eye exams, full-service optical center for prescription glasses, frames, contacts, full line of sunglasses as well. DavisVisionMD.com. It's DavisVisionMD.com. The announcement, of course, today across the street at Vivint Smart Home Arena was Dana White was in town, the president of UFC, announcing that UFC 278 is coming to town on August 20th. Ryan Smith, of course, right next to him, because this is a huge get for Vivint. This is a huge get for the state of Utah. And it was also a good time to ask some questions to Ryan Smith. Our own Jake Hatch was able to ask a couple of questions after everything. And Yach got some great answers. And I wanted to focus less on the UFC stuff and just about the Jazz things for right now, because the questions are coming up. And I think that everybody thinks that maybe Ryan Smith is a hands-on enough owner, Scott, that they'll go, oh, he's probably in those meetings with Danny Ainge and Justin Zanuck. And that might actually not be the case. But here's what he had to say about Danny Ainge and what he's doing in this coaching search and what he feels about Danny doing the job.
I checked in last night and this morning, and I think Danny and Justin are doing a great job. They're leading it out. I think, you know, I trust them, and I think we trust them. You know, with 100% confidence, I think we've got some great minds, and they're working amazingly together to go build out a process. And I think the good news is there's a lot of phenomenal coaches in the NBA. The NBA is in great hands, and that gives me a lot of comfort. I know it gives them is there's a great group of talented coaches, and we'll see where it goes.
The thing that jumps out for me with this is the fact that there are some people who have to have their thumb on you, and when they do that, it inhibits your talent, it inhibits your creativity, it stifles growth and development. Ryan Smith said, I hired Danny Ainge. I believe in him. I have confidence in him. Justin Zanuck, same thing, you know, go do your thing.
I'm going to check in. Like he said, I checked in this morning, checked in last night.
And that's an environment you want to be involved in, you want to be a part of. You don't want someone who just stifles everything, because what happens is Ryan Smith gets involved, and Danny Ainge and Justin Santa go, what do you think? They're always going to defer to the
Of course.
And they're not going to follow like their gut. And they're not going to go, I like this guy. I'm getting this from this guy, whatever. And when you have someone, you know, always over your shoulder, you can never just be you. And you is enough in most situations. We learn it's like with our children, in our work situation, all around. It's a great example of hire great people, let them do their job.
Here's what he actually said about that. I mean, like, I think people are excited that he's not the Jerry Jones type that goes,
I want to meet with him. Can I meet with him? Ask him a couple questions myself.
Like, nobody wants that guy to roll in and do that. Ryan Smith, here's what he said.
You know, I met with Jerry Jones. I almost went to the Dallas
Cowboys. Did he sound like that?
Well, no, he went and
watched. Scott, how can I get you here?
He did. I sat in his office, had that very conversation. He goes, I worked out for them. He went to the workout.
Why didn't you play for the Cowboys then?
I did. My agent says, we're not going to the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh.
I had negotiated with Jerry Jones my agreement. My agent says, no. You're just supposed to go there. You're not supposed to sign there.
Ugh. Bleh.
That's what I said.
Here's what Ryan Smith said about being involved in the coaching search himself.
I'm really not, I'll be honest with you. Like, I believe that you hire the best and you empower them. And I don't think there's a better basketball brain than Danny. He's definitely in the Mount Rushmore of NBA executives. And the way him and Justin are doing this process, I mean, we'll come in at the end and see the recommendations, see what they want to go do, and have long discussions and interview and meet the candidates at the end. But outside of that, I don't want to bias them.
Is there a Mount Rushmore of NBA executives? Is that a
I don't think so. But it's a great point. And the only thing I'm worried about Danny Ainge is he goes, look, I'm only gonna work like 40 hours.
No, it's 50.
Not the 80 hours.
No, he said he's going to do 10 hours of overtime.
No,
50 hours a week,
before,
man.
He used to work 80 hours a week, and he was just like, he was all in, and now he's just kind of.
He's two-thirds in?
Halfway in.
I don't think so.
Ainge is mailing it in.
Ainge is the Tom Brady of NBA executives. He just is smarter now. Might be a little bit older, a little bit slower on some of the things. And you know what he says? Yeah, but I've seen it all, and I know what we got to do here. I know I'm wise beyond my years. Here's what Ryan Smith had to say about a draft pick possibility. I think we've all been wondering about that, about what the Jazz are going to do on draft night coming up on Thursday.
I've been in the draft room twice, and I think both times they've asked to acquire a pick and pay money. So I think absolutely. I mean, everyone wants to be able to try to figure out if there's a young talent, especially with Danny's track record. I mean, I'd love to see if he had as many picks as possible. Yeah. Once again, like, it's a market. It's a marketplace, so it has to be right.
You know what? Was this the driving force behind us picking up a last minute? This is good.
Ryan Smith is going to buy a draft pick.
Right.
He's 1,000% going to buy a draft pick.
He treated it like the way that like my kid does. It's like, I know that I'm going to get around him and his friends, and he's going to ask me for $10 at the end of that. Hey, I've been in the draft room a couple of times, and both times I go, hey, can we buy somebody? Can I buy something here at the store? Like, that's the way it is. Can I get something while we're here at Dick's Sporting Goods? It's like every time you walk in, somebody's getting, like, the owner gets looked at and goes, oh, man, I really like these shoes. And they look at you and you go, how much? How much is a pick?
Now, Danny Ainge is going to go, well, the Warriors are buying a pick, and all my other and the Celtics are buying a pick.
That's exactly right.
Why don't I get one? You know, all my friends are going to be so, like, I'll be the only one at school that doesn't have a draft pick. Please buy me one.
Ryan Smith pulls his wallet out. Okay. Looks at the guy. How much for this? It's like asking the carny, how much for that? Just let me pay. Let me buy that.
Buy the stuffed animal.
How much? Finally. This is something that I think everybody knows already because he's done it before, but I think that Ryan Smith, I don't think that the idea of just doing what the Golden State Warriors have done and going into, you know, spend $500 million on a roster is going to do it, but he is willing to go into the luxury tax if the situation is right.
I think we showed that we brought everyone back. I mean, that was not an easy feat. Like, it's probably something that doesn't get talked about enough, that it was not easy to get everyone back after that Clippers loss and get everyone dialed in. I think Phoenix is going to have to go get back on the horse again after winning the regular season and doing that. And that's definitely challenging. But I think we showed that we're willing to go in if we think we can go. And we liked the percentages. We liked where we were at. And I think we owed it to everyone to go run it back that way. And, you know, unfortunately, we fell short.
We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We've got a lot of stuff to break down. The voice of the Cougars, Greg Wrubell, is going to join us next, too. Speaking of having a lot to get through today. Tomorrow, of course, BYU Football Media Day down in Provo at the broadcast building there on BYU campus. Always fun to go down to that every year. We're going to be there all day long. So many things going on with that. And by the way, like I said, Ryan Smith has said that he's been asked to buy draft picks before, and he's probably anticipating it again, which is a good time to announce. We're going to be at Wallabies 3 to 6. For our show, Unrivaled is going to be at Wallabies at the District in South Jordan. And then Tim Lacombe, Ben Anderson, and Jake Scott pick up things for draft night coverage as well right after at 6 o'clock. And if anything happens, we're going to be all over it for that draft night coverage right here on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. We'll come back. We'll chat with Greg Wrubell around the corner. We're still going to play some of these clips from Ryan Smith today, talking about the future of the Jazz, the coaching search, all those things. Stay with us. Unrivaled continues. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
All right, everybody, welcome on in. It's Unrivaled, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, former NFL quarterback Scott Mitchell to my right. Thanks for being with us on the program. Packed show today, of course, because of the announcement that UFC 278 is coming to Salt Lake. Ryan Smith cracked the mic for the first time, talking not just about that, but also commentary about the coaching search that the Jazz are doing, and also about the possibility of a draft pick on draft night, even though the Jazz don't have a draft pick. What are they going to do to maybe get one? He chatted about that. If you missed any of those comments, we're going to play a couple of those coming up in just a little while. First, we're going to kick off the hour. We've been chatting, of course, in preparation for BYU's final independence, final media day of football independence. And we're excited about this one because Greg Wrubell, the voice of the Cougars, is going to be joining us on the program right now. Greg, how's it going, my man?
Very, very well. Good to be with you guys.
We're excited about tomorrow. I'm interested to see what the final year of independence for the football media day. I mean, we've been going to all of them since the beginning, and it's just gotten better and better and better. And there's this weird thing where it's like, I know the Big 12 is going to be better, but we don't get this same football media day, maybe some iteration of it going forward. But there's a little part of me that goes, oh, shoot, I'm going to miss that stuff.
It's been a unique setting each year around this time because you have the stage to yourself. All the other media days happen in July. BYU gets out in front of it in June, and it's all about the Cougars. It's no one else to share space with, and that'll, of course, change when they go into the Big 12. But I think it's kind of a cool thing that, you know, through 11 years, 12 media days, they're able to kind of put this phase of the program to bed and get used to being part of a bigger spectacle. And let's consider the fact the Big 12 holds its media day that is actually media days. It's multiple days, and it's held at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, where the Big 12 football championship game is scheduled to be held every year. So they go to the stadium site and hold their media days there in Arlington, and they do that in mid-July. And so we presume that'll be the case again next year, as it'll be a 14-team conference with Texas and OU sticking around apparently through 2025. So it'll change in a great deal the way that BYU conducts itself at a media day, as opposed to kind of setting up your own parameters to being part of a much bigger deal down in Big D. And some media days, guys, there's a newsworthy element to it. They'll announce schedules. They'll announce, you know, other things that kind of have kind of a resonance. But really the news to come out of this one will be that it's the final one of the independence era. And it's going to be well attended, too. Upwards of, well, more than 40 players and coaches will be brought to this event tomorrow. And almost 70 media members have been credentialed for this event tomorrow here at the BYU Broadcasting. My office is in the BYU Broadcasting building, so I'm in the hubbub today.
So much is about going to the Big 12 for BYU, and of course, this being the last media day as an independent. What are you looking forward to about this season, though? What most excites you about what's going to happen this year?
Oh, Jaren Hall. I think if he can find himself, you know, playing every game and staying healthy, which hasn't happened for him yet. You know, he's dealt with having to leave the field and miss a game or two here and there. And if he can have a healthy season and be a 12, 13 game starter for BYU, I'm really eager to see what he could do. Because even last year, missing a couple of games and playing injured through a lot of the season, he put up some really remarkable numbers that put him in some pretty exclusive company with how efficient he was, how ball secure he was, how productive he was, and ultimately how good a runner he was as well. And so you throw all that together, not too many quarterbacks put together the kind of portfolio he did last year. So I think Jaren Hall excites me most. And then defensively, I think maybe hopefully a return to a little more of an Elisa Tuiaki, Kalani Sitake style of defense numbers-wise. I think they probably gave up a little too much, a little too frequently last year. The offense was good enough to you know, essentially negate any issues they might have had. But let's note, too, that a lot of the issues BYU had defensively were depth-related. They had only two players last year to start every game, and they were both in the secondary. The front seven got really banged up. And so I'm hoping for a little better help, a little better health, beg your pardon, on the defensive side of the ball, because that's been the biggest concern for BYU lately, has been losing guys to season-ending injuries. And you can't overstate how much losing Keenan Peely early last season affected BYU defensively. I think he was primed to have a great year, and the BYU defense looked really solid through two, three games. He went out, and a lot of things took a step back as the Cougars tried to deal with depth issues.
Depth issues are always been such a huge issue to be able to say, hey, BYU's been tremendous when those starting 22 are out there, right? And then there's been that fall off, which is, you know, one of those products of not being in a Power 5 conference. And yet we're already seeing that build up again. How close are they, do you think, kind of coming out in 2023 to have that depth available to be competing right out of the gates in the Big 12?
Well, I think we've already seen, you know, the recruiting resumes look a little beefier, and that will have to continue for BYU. I think last year's Baylor game was a really good bar setter. BYU was a good team last year, but Baylor kind of had its way with the Cougars in the trenches, and that was with a good offensive line for BYU last season too. So I think last year, not a true eye opener, but a good reminder of where you kind of have to need to be to contend at that level in the Big 12, and there's room to grow to that extent. And so I think, you know, with Kalani Sitake, primarily Elisa Tuiaki, having been a part of the Utah transition from G5 to P5, they know what it takes, and so they know what kind of has to be done to get to that standard that I use Baylor as an example, kind of showed them where you need to be. And that was a very, very good top-of-the-pack Baylor team last year in the Big 12. So you are talking about, you know, one of the best when you talk about Baylor last year. And BYU would have to be, you know, first or second to get themselves into, you know, some pretty nice and prime postseason spots in the future. But obviously the objective is to contend and get yourself back to Arlington to be in that title game at some point and not just be in the mix in the middle of the pack.
Is there anything that BYU can do this year that will help in its transition, or is it just one of those things where you just play out this year and then we just start kind of from ground zero?
No, I think another double-digit win season, another ranked finish, these kinds of things will be a good springboard, because I think everyone wants to see what, when this becomes a 14-team conference next year, just what kind of competition do the four new schools bring. And they've already gotten back-to-back seasons and ranked years in pretty special 2020 and 2021 campaigns. But I think this is even bigger than either last two seasons, because this will be the lasting impression that observers have before BYU becomes a Big 12 team.
Greg Wrubell, voice of the Cougars, of course, joining us here on Unrivaled, 97.5 VKSL Sports Zone. Greg, a lot of additions in the offseason happens now, even more so. It gets exciting with the transfer portal, and, of course, BYU already has the return missionary element, too. Of all the names that are on there, I think Christopher Brooks obviously has the tallest order to be able to replace a guy like Tyler Allgeier, and his name comes up so much. But of all the guys you see on that list of, you know, the guys that are coming in, whether it be an offensive lineman or a running back or What are the names of somebody that you look at and you go, that's one I'm circling here because that's going to be a key part to this BYU success this next year?
Yeah, well, the Cougars return enough guys. Let's note that you know, depending on who you go to for your quote-unquote experience ranks, BYU's a top five team, whether it's Bill Connolly or Phil Steele or others. BYU's a top five team in terms of experience, guys back, that is. And last year, you know, they were last or next to last in fewest guys returning. So they've gone from, you know, almost no experience by starts at least, and turning that into a 10-win campaign, to now coming off a 10-win campaign with almost everybody back that matters, with Tyler Allgeier being a notable exception. So BYU's deep enough that there doesn't need to be a ton of new guys have to come in and make a difference for BYU. But of the guys who are new that could make a difference, you can't overlook, you've already talked about them, Chris Brooks, because of the shoes he'll be asked to lace up immediately in Tyler Allgeier leaving the program. P5 back and Chris Brooks comes in. P5 fullback and Houston Haymooley comes in. And then you have another P5, another Pac-12 offensive lineman in Kingsley Suamataya. So I think on the offensive side of the ball, just those three guys alone can bolster a pretty deep offensive BYU team. And where they needed help was at running back. They got it in Brooks, and they add blocking in Haymooley and a very, very good offensive lineman to a BYU O-line that already returns, I think, 109 career starts, guys. So that's strength to strength there for BYU, bringing in Kingsley to a group that has that many starts and that many reps behind them. Coach Tuiaki's D-line already rotates a ton of guys, and I think last year's cast of characters will be more or less the same guys you will see this year. And although he's not a newcomer, Keenan Peely didn't play a lot last year. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of get to see Keenan again and get to be reminded again of what he was for BYU before he went out on the defensive side. And then you look for let's take the SEC transfer in Gabe Judy Lally from Vanderbilt to maybe make a dent on the secondary, which also returns, again, a lot of starts and a lot of reps, primarily from Malik Moore and D'Angelo Mandel. So maybe not a year for the newcomers to be the stars, but I think the fact that they can, you know, bolster what is a very deep team already says a lot about where BYU is right now in that ramp up personnel wise to be a Big 12 team.
I'll tell you, the more I watch this in the years, that having depth is the key. It really is to having a really successful year. You just have to have the depth, whether it's to replace guys or to actually keep guys fresh during the year and to be able to be fresh all year long. Especially
absolutely.
On that point, Scott,
there was a point last year, just to support your point, they were playing, there was a tryout player who was starting games last year for BYU. That's where things got. We're not talking preferred walk-on. We're talking school starts. We're having tryouts. One of those guys got into the starting lineup and, you know, played decently, but that's where BYU was last year at some points, at some parts of the field. So that's really it. I mean, and that'll ultimately be the biggest differentiator between G5 and P5 programs is what your twos and threes look like. And, yes, it's true. There's a next man up mentality, but there's a reason that the next man is the next man because the guy in front of him is better. And you can't lose too many of the better guys at the non P5 level without really feeling it. And the objective then is to get more of the next men to be closer to the first men, if you will.
So you've had a lot of time to watch Kalani Sitake grow and mature as a coach, and you talk to him a lot. You've seen him in really good situations, really bad situations. Where do you see that Kalani's made the most growth from when he started at BYU to where he is today?
Well, I think he already started from a pretty strong position to begin with, but first-year head coaches, that's going to be a challenge for anyone. I think his strength lies in, the innate who he is. Because I think Kalani is, as much as anything else, when it comes to tactics and putting together a game plan, he is a vibe. And that can be felt, you know, in fellow coaches and in players 1 through 105 and in recruits and in parents. And when you combine the fact that there's a feeling about the guy. I mean, you probably know him a little bit too, right?
Yeah.
And so there's a genuine, genuineness, of spirit and a true affability and a real sense of love and duty and commitment that all kind of come through him. And then when you add to that, you know, the X's and O's background he has on both sides of the ball, the results that are clearly there, he'll be a 50-win coach a few games into this season in just his seventh season on the sidelines. You know, and he's kind of operating on, and I like to bring it up sometimes, he's kind of operating on a similar pace to Lavelle Edwards when Lavelle took over the BYU program. Now, they took it over at different spots, right? Kalani was taken over for Bronco, who had great success. Lavelle was kind of building from the bottom. But Lavelle's challenges and Kalani's challenges were different. You know, Lavelle wasn't coaching in the independence era. Kalani is, and the schedules look different, and the challenges are different. And so I kind of see how you know, Lavelle's start to his career in terms of number of games and seasons is kind of going almost lockstep with Kalani right now in terms of where they are. And I think, you know, that kind of pace hopefully isn't purely coincidental, because you get a lot of the same feelings about Kalani that you did around Lavelle in terms of someone whose personality and nature and spirit kind of sets a tone for the program. And to the point where Lavelle became an expert delegator, and bringing in remarkable coaches with great schemes while still setting the tone for the program. And Kalani, you know, has clearly, I think, you know, as much of a hands-on approach as any head coach right now, but is able to, I think, occupy that kind of overseer role in a very comfortable way. Let's not forget the fact, too, guys, that Kalani had to make some difficult personnel decisions on his staff within his first couple, three seasons. Yeah.
Which were tough. I mean, that was a hard thing for him to have to do.
Right. And so, you know, to go through that, ride that storm out, and then get positive results from the changes he made, you know, that's a very galvanizing force as well, to see someone that have to go through a bit of a refiner's fire, make some tough calls, and get results on the back end. But I think affixing the P5 label to Kalani and his program has already made a world of a difference. And whether it's in more staffers, different kinds of staffers, the kind of recruiting net they can now cast, the improvements that will come to the program, the exposure in the Big 12, all these things will benefit and ideally kind of bolster a really strong foundation that Kalani has set for this program.
You got to remember, Lavelle coached Alex's father-in-law, too.
My father-in-law, yeah, he's, of course. Yeah. He had to deal
that
with
that was
him.
A challenge right yeah, there absolutely. In and of itself.
Greg, one of the things, I mean, we looked forward to this media day, and like you were waiting during the state of the program that Tom Holmoe would roll something out, and we'd just cross our fingers sometimes and go, please let it be something that's amazing, you know, in independence. But now, like you said, obviously the big announcement already happened, you know, 9 months ago. And so tomorrow, what are we going to see from Tom Holmoe? Are we going to get an out-of-conference schedule for BYU in that 2023 season, or what can we expect? Because we still want to make things exciting for tomorrow. What's on the docket?
Right. Well, it is interesting to think about the fact that when last year's media day was held, the Big 12 wasn't even an inkling. Like there was no conversation about it because it wasn't – yeah, I mean, Texas and OU had not made their decision yet. So it was truly a typical independence media day last year. So much happened in the 3 to 4 months after media day that makes this one look entirely different. But I don't know that it'll be as newsy a day as we've hoped for it to be in the past, because like you said, the news has already been made. The news tomorrow is the steps toward transition and the fact that you can now say you've ridden out this independence era on a largely successful record. The Bronco days brought BYU in. The Kalani days will bring BYU up. But there were a lot of double-digit win seasons in those independent schedules, which were always front-loaded, very, very challenging. I think BYU did as much as it could do as an FBS independent. Was probably as equipped as any program in the country to succeed with the challenges they had. So I think job well done to get to this point. And really continuing job well done for Tom to pare down the future schedules, because they had to go from load, load, load to cut, cut, cut. And they've been able to do it more or less successfully. And so kudos to Tom in a lot of ways for that. But I just think back on all the great crowds BYU got to play in front of in different places of the country they wouldn't normally go to. The fact that during this time, although they weren't officially recognized as a P5, other P5 leagues began to kind of look at BYU as a P5 caliber program in terms of their scheduling quota, right? Because they had to play so many P5 teams out of league, and they said, well, we're going to count BYU in that group. And that was kind of a pat on the back at the time that you're doing a good job as an independent. And so I think, again, all things considered, they sailed through it about as well as they possibly could.
Full staff and players and coaches tomorrow. You guys are all going to be in Royal? What are we expecting tomorrow? That's like half the thing now.
I think Royal's the mode tomorrow. And, yeah, they're bringing a ton. Like I said, every coach and like around 30 players, so more than 40 players and coaches will be here. And there will be some names from the past who've been kind of bouncing around town this week, some pretty big names that might show up in a program here or there. I know that you guys and others will have, you know, a lot of coverage from tomorrow. I'll have our 2-hour radio show with Riley Nelson on BYU Radio. 4 hours of live BYU TV shows will be on ESPN3 to supplement the coverage. So it's a big blowout, and we'll get a lot of national play before BYU becomes one of 14 teams wading its way through media days next year in Texas, it looks like.
Looking forward to it, Greg. We'll talk to you tomorrow, and we'll catch up there, and then we'll get down to business. It's going to be awesome. Thanks for joining us today, man.
We'll look for you then. Always a pleasure. And, the football season for BYU is 74 days from today.
The old countdown. We love it. All right, Greg, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you again. We're coming back. More to go here on the program. When we return, I've got some of those comments that you may not have gotten from Ryan Smith about the Utah Jazz and about whether or not that coaching search, if he's dipping in on that coaching search himself, if the Jazz are looking for a draft pick. Speaking of draft, we're going to be at Wallabies at the District in South Jordan on Thursday for draft night. Now, the Jazz don't have a draft pick, but that's, I think, where we're at right now, is that I think there might be, if there's some fireworks, we're going to be there. Either way, we're going to be there, but you're going to get our show, and then right at 6 o'clock, Coach Tim Lacombe, Jake Scott, Ben Anderson all hanging out as well at Wallabies there at the District in South Jordan. We'll take a break. Many thanks to Greg Rubel for joining us today. Looking forward to tomorrow, BYU's Media Day, their final year of independence in their BYU football Media Day. So we'll come back. More to go right here on the program. It's 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone right here. It's Unrivaled.
It's Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
I'm really not, I'll be honest with you. Like, I believe that you hire the best and you empower them. And I don't think there's a better basketball brain than Danny. He's definitely in the Mount Rushmore of NBA executives. And the way him and Justin are doing this process, I mean, we'll come in at the end and see the recommendations, see what they want to go do, and have long discussions and interview and meet the candidates at the end. But outside of that, I don't want to bias them.
All right, welcome back. It is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. We are Unrivaled. Thanks for being with us. Awesome day today. My heavens. Tons of stuff going on. And we're just going to have a giant week the rest of the week. We got BYU Football Media Day tomorrow down in Provo, all day broadcasting from the BYU Broadcast Building, 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. And then Thursday, we've got some extended draft coverage, or at least a draft special. We're going to be at Wallabies in South Jordan at the District. And Wallaby Smokehouse, don't want to miss it. So anytime there's food involved, Scott, we'll be there. All right? And we've got some draft stuff to
especially
talk about.
Especially Cheez-Its. There's Cheez-Its.
That's something I'm going to start a restaurant. You know how they do peanuts at some restaurants? They're like, ooh, we've got some peanuts going on. I'm going to do a full barrel of Cheez-Its. There's all the people are going to have before they get going.
Well, it's less messy.
Is it, though?
Yeah, because you don't get all that stuff.
Not when I get into it. That was Ryan Smith talking about empowering Danny Ainge. That was today after the UFC announcement of UFC 278 coming to Salt Lake City. He and Dana White from the UFC made that announcement. And then Jake Hatch, nice enough to grab some sound right afterward as well. Yak pulled some of that, and you'll be able to hear some of that sound as well tomorrow on DJ and PK in the morning. We're going to blow this thing out big time, because those comments about letting somebody else make that decision, he's the basketball brain, right? I'm going to let him make that decision. And that's a huge thing for him to do, Scott. I know that, like, some guys want to get way involved, and I think that he is dead serious when he says, no, I want to get involved in a lot of the in some of the business decision making. But when it comes to hiring guys, when it comes to actually picking a coach, don't put me in the room. Just keep me updated on who you're going to get and why you're going to get them.
And Danny Ainge is a good guy, you know, to get because, you know, as Ryan said, you know, Mount Rushmore, this is a guy that understands winning championships as a player, as a front office management person. He's been really good, really savvy at making some tough trades, some pretty, you know, heady trades and draft picks. You know, he's found some gems in the draft and the coaching hires he's had. And he does his homework. People, you know, they just know. You know, some people just have a knack for and they watch and observe. They're great observationalists. And Danny Ainge is one of those guys. In listening to him describe what he saw in a guy like Brad Edwards and same thing with Doc Rivers.
Brad Stevens. Yeah.
Brad Stevens. Mm-hmm. Sorry, he talked about a lot of detail and being able to pick up on that. And that's, you know, not everyone sees that. That a lot of people just look at the surface and they don't really delve into what makes a person successful or not. So that's exciting. But the other thing to me is, you know, Ryan Smith talked about the luxury tax. He goes, yeah, we'll go on the luxury tax in the right situation.
Which they've done before. I mean, I think.
Well, he talked about last year and the Jazz just, they made a choice. They said, we're going to keep it all together. We're going to double down. We think we're really close. And here we go. And it ended up being the wrong choice. The team didn't pan out for whatever reason. But he was willing to do it. The thing, though, that just is another thing that just stood out to me today was him talking about the parade. Like, he goes, I saw the parade, and I saw how stinking exciting it was. You know, and when you have an owner that has that vision where they go, okay, I see this. You know, I can see State Street. I can see this big celebration right out of Vivint. You know, the John Stockton, Karl Malone statues and all that stuff, or by the note, you know, in the front of the Vivint Arena. But he sees it and he saw it and he wants it. And when you get these people that, you know, have the courage and the guts to go start a company he sells for couple billion dollars or whatever he does,
I think it was eight.
Yeah. It's in the billions.
Yeah.
The point is this is a person that's not afraid to take some risks, sure. Not afraid to get out there and do things. And he's a fan. And he's a fan who wants a championship. And I just think it's super exciting. We're starting to kind of unravel who Ryan Smith really is. And we're starting to see who he really is. And he's starting to put his stamp on this Utah Jazz basketball team and the whole organization. And it's kind of exciting to see where this whole thing might go.
Here's what he had to say about draft night. The Jazz don't have a draft pick. So would you have a draft, like war room on a draft night where you don't have draft picks? Well, sounds like they're going to have something going on. And whether or not it's listening to offers, whatever it might be, we know that Ryan Smith's going to be there possibly with a checkbook if something's interesting enough.
I've been in the draft room twice, and I think both times they've asked to acquire a pick and pay money. So I think absolutely. I mean, everyone wants to be able to try to figure out if there's a young talent, especially with Danny's track record. I mean, I'd love to see if he had as many picks as possible. Yeah. Once again, like, it's a market. It's a marketplace, so it has to be right.
You get a draft pick. You get a draft pick. Like, I mean, hey, I liked Danny's track record. And Danny's like, did he just tell me that I could basically pick out a handful of guys that I like? Do you like that? Do you like the convertible, son? We'll get it for you.
How do you say no to Danny Ainge?
I know, especially you when go, you probably told him to get him here. And you're right, going to have carte blanche to be able to kind of do what you want.
And he has his reputation. Like he's, you know, he's found some
right.
some gems before.
No slouch.
And when he goes, nah, this guy's a gem. We should do it. And the guy's available.
Can you make the check out to cash?
What I think might be interesting possibly are trades. Are there guys that potentially could get trade? Is a guy like Rudy Gobert on the trading block on draft night, or does that come later? Or anyone else?
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating on Thursday to find out kind of exactly the direction that he and the rest of the team leadership want to go. So to me, it's fascinating too.
You know,
if you're in that room, I mean, you all these guys want to make something happen, of them.
And you look at you go, well, who do the Jazz have that they could draft? You know, they could trade, right? And you go, because like you know, maybe for whatever reason, they just kind of didn't fit in with the Jazz. And you look at Andrew Wiggins, who was in Minnesota, and he and people thought, you know, he was a bust or whatever. He wasn't, didn't live up to everything he had. And the Warriors go, that guy is a piece that will fit in very nicely here. Even a guy like Hassan Whiteside, who came here, I think he came here with a little bit of baggage and probably played himself into a better situation from where he was with the Jazz. And so, you know, some of the players that the Jazz have, they could potentially be traded. And there's someone may see, you know, someone's trash is someone else's treasure, and another team may see the value there. The same thing with the Jazz. They may go, man, there's a guy out there that's so underutilized. He's in such a bad situation. It just doesn't fit for him, and he could really, really fit very nicely with us here. And you want to think that a guy like Danny Ainge would have an eye for that type of thing. And so the draft, although there are no draft picks, could end up being very, very exciting for the Jazz.
Yeah, and I think part of the thing is that no one's going to go into draft night. When you see moves made, I think people get nervous, but I think the more nerve-wracking thing is having zero picks. Like, to me, that's the most nerve-wracking thing. You have zero picks to figure out this year, guys. What do we do?
It's so dumb.
What was that?
We can't even go to the draft. I mean, it's just like, it just feels weird. It also feels weird to me. It's like, well, you can buy a pick, too.
How many picks do you want, son?
It almost seems like there really are no rules when it comes to the draft.
Well,
there's no order or structure in any of it. And like the Jazz, like it's because the Jazz had the best record in the regular season, they had the last pick in the draft, and they were out after the first round of the playoffs. Shouldn't it go like the champion and then the team that took second and kind of so on and so forth? Kind of, I don't know.
I wonder how much. You know, we're talking about how that rookie scale in the NBA of what it looks like. The NFL has a scripted, you know, just the amount that if you're the first pick in the draft, you have X amount of dollars you're going to get.
They're slotted. They're all slotted.
Any guesses for that third or for those first 3 years for a guy? If you're drafted first in 2022, what it's
in the NBA?
Like? Yeah.
I wouldn't have a clue.
It's actually a lot higher than I thought it would be. $8.5 million for your first year, 8.8 for your second year, and then 9.3 for your third year if you're the first overall pick. So that probably doesn't include incentives and stuff too. So those are just your salaries, and then you basically cut it. You basically cut $1 million off of each one of those two. Second pick overall, $7.5 million, almost $8 million, and then just over $8 million.
See here's what's hard for me hearing those numbers. All I have in my head is Deshaun Watson got $230 million guaranteed. I just can't get over that.
Right.
Right? So it's like, yeah, $9 million a year. Fine. You know, whatever.
Yeah, you look and you go, hey, 3 years, $28 million.
Come back and talk to me when you're at 45 a year. Like,
and some of these first year, or some of these draft picks, man. I mean, if you're the Jazz and you got to pay $3 million to get that 15th or 16th pick in the draft. Is it worth it? And is it worth going into that? I mean, my heavens, if you could have just one pick, that's all you want. I don't want a second round draft pick. Give me a draft pick that is, I don't want anything even, this is how snooty I am. I don't want anything even between 23 and 20 and 30.
If there's
like, give me something in the teens and up.
If right, if there's
a first world sports problem, hey, I don't want any of that. Don't throw me one of those garbage number 26 overall.
Well,
picks.
No, but there's got to be a strategy to it. In that, you got to have, you got to just really know and have a feeling on a guy, or you got to be a guy away, right?
Don't give me a feeling. I want Danny Ainge to have it broken down perfectly. Like, this is why this guy's going to be amazing.
But that's that feeling, right? It's just like a lot of people are looking past this guy, but here's what he is. If you're the Golden State Warriors, they had a strong nucleus of players. They just needed to pull in a couple of extra guys that kind of rounded out their entire team. You know, they're eight guys to play.
I think you heard Ryan Smith say
with the Jazz, though, Alex.
Yeah.
Who's even on the team next year?
Okay.
I mean, when you hear Ben Anderson say,
"No, they're gone.
Everyone's gone." Like, so how could you get a feeling on a guy and say, yeah, that guy's going to fit in with this?
You know what that means? All the more reason that Daddy Warbucks, Ryan Smith, rolls in and goes, all right, what do you want? What do you want for a draft pick? Tell me what you need. Let's figure it out. And if there's somebody that Danny Ainge likes, it sounds like he's going to be able to have the ability to get it, or at least try to make that deal.
So I learned something. When you're a new head coach.
Yeah.
So when I first started coaching high school football, the advice I got was ask the principal for everything you possibly can in year one.
Because after that, they just start cutting everything.
Because then, it's like just so I did. Right. I was just like, you know, I need new equipment. I need new.
Oh,
this,
you did?
Oh, yeah.
We need a soda machine in the coach's office.
So Danny Ainge, same thing. I need draft picks. I need to trade this.
While you're at it, give me two for next year, too.
Right.
And I got nothing next year either.
And I need purple in the jersey. I mean, whatever it is, just ask for it all early on.
You know what that's going to actually.
Because if you make a mistake, then the owner's going to go, what the heck am I doing this for? Because the last guy you picked was garbage.
See, BYU's going to feel left out tomorrow for their media day. You know what they're going to do? They're going to roll out. The bib jerseys are a part of our legacy. We're bringing tan back. Tan is part of our DNA. Is it tan? What color was that? I mean, that was light brown that they used in their color scheme. That was terrible. And I was there at school during that time. Please don't.
Yeah, I missed that.
Purple in the jet. Hey, bring purple back to the Cougars. My high school, we were all purple.
That
we
royal purple. Blue has a little bit of purple in it.
No,
there's
it doesn't.
There's a tinge of
what
purple.
What are you seeing?
Well, if it's a bad like coloration on the TV,
oh,
you know,
okay,
before high definition.
So if somebody hit the TV with a baseball, maybe it looks a little purple.
Right. You know, you just get one of those older versions of television.
Let's take the break here. We'll come back when we return. 2 minute drill around the corner. It's been a packed day, so stuff that we weren't able to get to. It's a lot of it. So stay right here with us. It's 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone. It's unrivaled.
Your home for the best coverage of the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, and Aggies. Y'all ready? This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
It's our show, all right?
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It's Unrivaled. Does that sound like I was into it?
It's a rabble.
97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, former.
It actually sounded like you hurt yourself.
Hey, everybody. Ow!
They have those music DJs.
That's can you pull a gut muscle?
Oh, that's the thing.
From speaking?
I don't know if it's a gut muscle, but you could get a sports hernia. If you're hosting a sports radio show, is it a sports hernia? If you're like bend over and, I don't know, hurt yourself?
Put some Icy Hot on it. You'll be fine.
Scott, we got to get to that portion of the show that we love so much.
All right, let's do it.
We fire up some music here. And that music signifies one thing. We're to the old two-minute drill here on the program. Scott, you've done a two-minute drill in the NFL, so explain what we got to do on the show here.
I will. Late in the game, you got to go down the field, kick a field goal, score a touchdown. You do not have a lot of time, so you have to hurry. Our show is the same way. Still have a lot to talk about, but not a lot of time. So we talk a little bit about a lot of things. Hurry up, finish the show, go home happy with the trophy, because everybody gets a trophy today, because we all participate. Of course, we also get a plethora of desserts, which include chocolate souffle, flan from Spain, key lime pie from Florida, and a trifle. Mm. Trifle? Which is also known as sex in a pan.
Is it?
Yes.
I was just looking on the World of
It's really not a pan. It's more like a clear...
Yeah, it's
like
called the
bowl.
Trifle. It's called the trifle dish.
Yeah, and you just kind of pack it in there, and
it's not a pan.
Yeah,
it's a bowl. It's clear. You got to see the.
So it's sex in a clear pan.
Okay, quit it.
Or bowl.
Scott, first things first on the old 2 minute drill here. What?
Jeremy's shaking his head at me.
Well, I am too.
Shaking me up. I want to throw the heater, and he's like, no, give me the curveball.
You're the gross old guy.
Gross old guy.
The creepy old guy in the building now.
Hey, everybody. You like dessert?
You like a trifle?
Hey, kids. You like dessert out there?
Want it in a clear bowl?
Lincoln Riley says, that he only took one call, and that was from USC.
Whatever.
He didn't take a call from LSU or the NFL. Whatever. You believe that, Scott?
And he probably said on Tuesday. So no, I never took a call because it was Tuesday, but Wednesday I did. Or as Jeremy just said, his agent took all the calls.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't technically talk to anybody.
Yeah.
My agent talked to 64 teams, but I was on there. I'm so dang excited because the NCAA football is coming back. It's going to be for 2023. Now, initially, they were, I think, going to try to bring it back as early as when it was announced. I think the thoughts were, hey, we can get this thing going maybe in 2022. Now, but I will say that they have been asking for all the FBS teams to pitch in what their stadium sounds are, what the things they do inside of the stadium. Because they do the thing where they take a picture of the full stadium. EA Sports, EA doesn't do a great job of a lot of things, but EA Sports doing college football. It is my favorite video game of all time, college football from EA Sports. I cannot wait for them to bring it back.
Well, you have to think with this NIL stuff.
Are they going
to
have their names on it now?
I'm sure. They'll have to have something.
Yeah, man.
Why not?
I'm all for it. Yeah. This shocked me a little bit, but I don't know. You tell me, Scott. Mike Krzyzewski, of course, retiring as the most important American coach in the history of sports, maybe. Duke's former basketball coach.
He was pretty good.
He says he has no plans to attend Duke home games this year. Quote, doesn't want to be a distraction.
Could you imagine when he...
LaVell came to games, he sat up in the president's loge. Yeah, people bother you up there.
There's nowhere to sit but in the bleachers at Cameron.
Cameron Indoor.
They'd all start bowing. We're not worthy. We're not worthy. No, he would be a massive distraction.
They'd lose a game and they all look at coach, see what happens.
Yeah.
He probably won't be able to help coach
it. They'd start chanting for him to go get on the bench.
I know, or just like they're down by 8 at the half. And he stands up from his seat and walks to the locker room, and the crowd goes nuts. Yeah. Say something to him, coach. Oh, my goodness. Finally, Manny Ramirez says Derek Jeter would have been just a, quote, regular player if he were in Kansas City and not New York. Is that a real thing, Scott?
You know.
The captain was pretty good, though. I mean, he played really good.
He was amazing, but it's that whole thing about where the market you're in, the team you're on. The people that you're around, so much of your success is dependent upon other people. So, yeah, I could see that happening.
All right. We're going to take the long break here. Did we get through everything? I got through everything I think I wanted to. I know I don't want to pile on Arizona State, Jeremy. There's an Arizona State story in there. I don't want to pile on Arizona State. They're struggling to keep talent, apparently. You want to get to it tomorrow? No, we're doing BYU Media Day. I'm not talking about Arizona State. I'm BYU Media Day. Sun Devils can stick it, man. They got that pitchfork. All right. We're going to take the long break here, as I said. No, it's not the long break. We'll come back next hour. So just if you miss anything, download the podcast. Find anything of any of the shows all day long, KSLSports.com, also the KSL Sports app. Anywhere podcasts are found, listen to all of the programs all day long. Taking the break. Coming back. More to go right here. It's 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. It's unrivaled.
Your home for the best coverage of the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, and Aggies.
Y'all ready?
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
It's our show, all right?
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Welcome back. Final segment of Unrivaled here with you on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Thanks for being with us, Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Final segment of the show, wrapping these up here real quick. I'm always looking forward to who the next, like, great analyst is going to be, right? I like watching stuff and going, that guy, he had some amazing insight. Obviously, everybody's, like, obsessed with Tony Romo when he would, like, predict plays at the beginning. And I think he has a pretty good ease about how he explains things. And it's just, you can, like, kind of hear his smile. I think people like Tony Romo and the way he breaks it. I love Chris Collinsworth. I think he's one of the best, maybe ever, to break things down. Amazon, of course, is. Could you imagine us saying this 5 years ago? Hey, Amazon's football coverage of the NFL this year. Like, how weird is that? So their Thursday night NFL games they're going to be covering. Al Michaels is, of course, calling these games. Ryan Fitzpatrick has been added to the analyst group, and I love it. Fitzmagic is Harvard educated. I think he's got 74 kids. He wore that gold chain.
Played had 17 years.
He played 17 years in the
and
league,
been on
man.
Like 7 or 8 teams.
He has seen every offense and every defense possible.
Probably knows everyone in the NFL.
There's no way this guy, before he's even cracked the mic, Scott, is now my official favorite analyst.
Well, and he'll be dressed to the
nines,
occasion.
Baby.
So he had something interesting to point out about Zach Wilson.
Oh, so give me the first breakdown.
He was asked about the New York quarterbacks.
Let me hear the first breakdown.
So here's his thing about Zach Wilson. He says, I know he's got a lot of different people in his ear. He's got different coaches flying in, and I'm sure he's got life coaches and
his
agents.
Mom.
And his mom. And my biggest advice to him would be go out to dinner, have a beer with your lineman, be yourself. Don't try to be what everyone thinks a starting quarterback in the NFL should be. And if he does that, he's going to be relaxed and he'll be just fine.
You know what? Zach Wilson, have a beer, buddy. Relax. Isn't that what it is?
You know, I never had that advice from anyone. No one ever
Mitchell,
said, go drink a beer with your offensive lineman.
Relax, kid.
So Daniel Jones.
What did he say about him?
Well, he kind of said, you know, he runs the ball well.
Did he do the whole, he's a nice guy?
He's a nice guy.
Oh, no,
he's
didn't.
All of these things. Yeah, he goes, basically,
boy.
This is kind of a make or break. What he did is he went around everything other than to say Daniel Jones is
not
doesn't
good.
Got, he hasn't
he's like,
got
oh,
it.
He's a good golfer. He's like a 4 handicap.
Not going to happen.
All right. We'll take the break here for Scott Mitchell, Alex Keery, our producer Jeremy, hitting the buttons. We'll be back again tomorrow. Another edition of Unrivaled live from BYU Media Day down there in Provo. We'll see you then, everybody. 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.